Also, more tickets to the Kevin and Bean Singles Party, which, of course, is tomorrow night. And just in time for Valentine's Day, Kevin, I believe you have an email you'd like to read as we get into our next subject.
I do. This is from our friend Aisa, who works here at the station. She works in promotion. She's the best. She says, Chuck and I are carpooling home, sitting in traffic right now. We're using our time to wisely brainstorm promotional ideas for the station. We've come to the conclusion that I should have an alternative career as a dominatrix. Chuck says, this is Aisa writing, Chuck says I'd be good because I'm allegedly a bitch.
Allegedly.
I like the idea because I want some douchebag to pay me to effing humiliate and degrade him instead of free like usual. Can we figure out a way to help me get this new career? Can you guys do a segment, Ask a Dominatrix? Love, Aisa. P.S. The safe word is Boston cream pie.
Okay, that's good, important.
It's a lot to say with a gag in your mouth. That's all I'm saying.
Aisa, good morning.
Good morning.
We set this up just for you.
Thank you, guys.
Like you need any instruction.
And Mistress Gemini, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm fabulous.
Excellent.
Oops, sorry.
Don't hit the mistress.
I'm going to pay for that later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, Mistress Gemini, wow, where do we start? How long have you been in the dominatrix business?
8 years.
8 years.
Okay. How'd you get started in it? Was it like Aisa, where it was just a brainstorm? It just came to you and you thought, hey, that'd be fun?
Actually, no. It was a... I don't know. I met a lady who was a dom, and she opened up her own private studio and asked to train me and some of my friends so that we could work there and, you know, have a little team. And
did you go to her and say, I'm looking for this, or did you say, I think you'd be good at it?
No, I was started hanging out with some certain people, and we started going to clubs, goth clubs, and different events, and met this lady through a mutual friend, mm-hmm. and it was like, oh, okay. I was at college at the time, and... you know, I just did it, excuse me, as fun. And then I graduated.
Right.
Excuse me. And then it was like, okay, well, what do I do now? I could go work, you know, 100 hours for somebody else. Or
kick guys in the balls and get paid for it.
I can work for myself.
That's part of it, right?
The rest is history. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. My favorite sport.
Kickball. Yeah.
But I know the guys that come to you get a turn on if they enjoy
so.
Sexually. It's fun for them. But do you enjoy it as well, or is it just a job where you're just going through the motions?
Oh, no. I love it. I'm a lifestyle, so I have personal slaves, too.
So by lifestyle, Dom, you mean that's what you do in your own sexual life as well? That's
yes.
How many personal slaves do you have?
I have one, but I don't have sex with my slaves.
Oh,
can I say that word?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So they get all the bad and none of the good. When
yes,
they come
that's
to your
right.
House.
Aisa, how many slaves do you have?
30.
And she has sex with all of them.
Yeah, right.
Now, Ralph, beer mug used to be one.
Yeah, I know.
Ralph, you're the one who put us in touch with Mistress Gemini.
Yes.
Is she the one that you went to all those years ago when you taped the piece for Sex You?
No, that was Mistress Akasha was her name.
Ooh, I have the tape. Okay. If you want to hear some of that.
Oh, you went to see a dominatrix?
Yes, you did.
In the just for investigative journalism purposes.
Yeah, sure.
And here it is.
You want it?
Yes.
Yes, what?
Yes, mistress.
Say you want it.
I want it.
Oh. You like that?
Yes.
Yes, what?
It
yes,
sounds
mistress.
So convincing.
Oh,
yeah. Lying through my teeth.
You like that, don't you?
Yes.
You're a good little boy, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes, what?
Yes, mistress.
How long ago was this?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Did she give you a warm up?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We started rolling the tape a little while into it. Yeah.
Yeah. That
I would say, you can tell I'm saying just anything she wants me to say in order to not get it worse.
To not get it worse, and it didn't work.
I was not the kind of guy who ordinarily would like to enjoy that sort of treatment.
No.
But,
no.
Some guys, they get ecstatic about it. They get orgasmic over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know them.
Gemini, were you inclined to be dominant in your relationships prior to taking this on as a profession, or did this world kind of open up to you once you started?
Well, you know, I've always intimidated men, but I never knew why, and now I do, you know. So I guess I've always
been... You like kicking them in the balls. That's why.
I've always had a very strong, you know, personality and very independent.
How about you?
I think I'm pretty shy and demure.
Yeah.
Oh, liar.
Yeah, that's
right.
No,
that's you.
It's not, I think more of the question is not necessarily, I guess, dominating him in my everyday basis, but I can be a little bit.
A little
you
aggressive.
Know,
I was a little too fast, you know, too aggressive in the bedroom for my own good, I think. So scared him off.
Do you have any questions for her before we take questions from the listeners?
My question is, to some extent, is it more of a, like, are you personally gaining, you know, sexual pleasure from it, or is it, you know, or is it just like a job in every scenario?
You know, I don't get any sexual pleasure. First of all, let's read. You know, I already said I don't do that, with, especially with clients.
And most dominatrix do not. Right?
No, they
there's
don't.
No sexual contact.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no nudity.
You're going to kick me in the balls and not have sex with me?
That's right.
That's
and you love me for it.
Kidding me?
That's the standard operational
but
procedure.
But why would a guy do that then?
Because it's not about sex. It's mental. It's cerebral. And
but that's like going to the hooker for the conversation.
No. They need more right. than that. It's you know, there's a lot of...
Yeah, but I thought that was included.
No.
Wow.
Sorry.
It's an emotional, mental experience.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if this is just an impression I've gotten wrongly through what I've seen of the dominatrix trade on TV and movies, but many of the people who come to you, it's because they're so powerful and have so much responsibility in their real lives that they like not having to think and make up their own decisions on their own. Is that
some
part of
them
it?
Do. Yes, a lot of lawyers and doctors. Yeah.
Lawyers and doctors.
Who feel freed by giving up that control and submitting to someone else's will.
Yeah, right? Or, you know, not just a high-powered businessman, you know, in their family life, they have to be in control, too, and so they need a little release, and so, you know, so they'll come in for that.
It's completely legal what you do, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there's no sex.
And Aisha, you know, if she's serious about being interested in getting into it, is it the type of thing you can, a woman could make a living pretty well being a dominatrix?
Yes, you can, but... you know, supply and demand, it's very oversaturated right now, especially here in Los Angeles.
Oh, it is. There's too many dominatrixes.
There's way too many dominatrixes for the clients. And then you have to sort of establish a reputation, and it takes a couple years, you know, to get that.
Do drive-bys and stuff like the rappers when they fight over turf?
You throw a riding crop at each other?
Wait, speaking of riding crop, what are the clothes? What are the...
All right, we need to take a break, but we'll be back. Aisha, very, very excited about this.
Shut up.
We're going to do Ask a Dominatrix. We'll take your calls as well, 1-800-520-106.
Dominatrix. Oh, dominatrix.
Ask a dominatrix.
Dominatrix.
Oh, ask a dominatrix.
Hey, you try to rhyme dominatrix.
Falco lives.
It's the latest in a long line of Ask-as on the Kevin Abid Show here on the world-famous K-Rock. Ask a dominatrix at 1-800-520-1067. Mistress Gemini in the studio. Good morning, Gemini.
Good morning.
Also, our friend Aisha, who works here hard at the promotions department at KRock.com. In fact, if you go to the singles party tomorrow night, enjoy it. It's because of Aisha and the hard work that she and her staff have put together. Here's reading from Mistress Gemini's website, and then we'll get to your calls. I am the goddess you dream about, the woman you long to dedicate your whole existence to. The moment you walk through my door and gaze upon my superior beauty, you will be humbled immediately and brought to your knees in quivering anticipation.
Aisha's putting her arms in your leg.
She's cheering.
You will relinquish control with a hungering passion, yearning to be subjected to my whims of sadistic torments or endless teasing. And it goes on and on and on. And I can't read it anymore because I need a moment. All right.
I think B means some what they call CBT.
What's that?
Which we can't really say.
Oh, no. Yes, he does. If he had all of those items, he would.
I think B would enjoy some CBT. Genital torture, I guess you'd call that.
Yes, you would.
1-800-520-1067. Let's go to Johnny in Ontario on line 6 first. And I think this is going to dovetail nicely into what Aisha's question was before the break in terms of the clothing and the props. Good morning, Johnny. You're on Ask a Dominatrix on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. Good morning, Lisa May.
Good morning.
Gemini.
Hello.
What is your favorite tool when you dominate a guy?
Favorite tool?
Yes.
A Makita power drill?
That's hard. It's got to
be
right
Makita,
there,
though, right?
Yeah, well, 1/8 bit, usually.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Oh, that's so hard because I have so many...
gets asked for the most? Or I guess they don't ask, do they?
Actually, I do. I do.
Oh, do.
I do have a little application to because everybody has different things that they like.
What's the most? What do you use the most?
I would say
baseball bat.
Oh no!
You know,
sorry, Johnny.
A flogger, a crop, a single tail.
Okay, so
paddles,
a whip,
yeah.
Some kind of whip.
Bear trap?
Basic.
Bear trap.
Now there's one I have.
Wow, I didn't think of that. They walk in and they get caught in it.
There you go.
Thank you for the call.
A flogger's like a whip with a bunch of leather sort of tassels on the end of it, right?
Yes,
What do you wear, Gemini?
Lots of leather, rubber, High heels, boots.
Heels.
A lot of black.
A lot of black, yes.
Yeah. Aisa already dresses all in black anyway.
So she's got yeah,
no kidding. Halfway there. Now, Aisa, we're going to go through some calls, but if you have any questions in between, feel free.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Janet in Los Angeles. Good morning, Janet.
Hi, Kevin, Bean, Lisa, and especially the mistress.
Yes.
Hello, Janet.
Hi. I was wondering, in your private life, do you ever reverse the roles? Like, do you ever, you know, get a dominatrix and, you know...
You're the submissive? Is that what they call them?
Dominated.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I'm not submissive. No.
That's a switch, right? Someone who goes back and forth?
Yes. Yeah. And I actually did start off a switch when I was still at college, learning about my own sexuality, and I thought I'd make more money, actually, but no, you know, the submissives don't want to see, you know that their mistress is, you know, crawling around kissing somebody else's feet. And after about the fifth or sixth session, as I'm looking at the boot, I'm like, you know, this isn't really doing it for me anymore.
You and me both, by the way.
I don't think I'm going to do this anymore. So. And then my business tripled, you know, it was funny, so, yeah.
All right, let's go to Rob in Los Angeles. Good morning, Rob. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Good morning, guys. How's everything going?
Good. Ask a dominatrix.
I want to know, what's the worst that you've ever hurt somebody? Like, has anybody been, like, hospitalized or something like that?
I try not to put you in the hospital, but...
it's bad for business.
Yeah, it's bad for business. But I've beaten people pretty bad, you know, bloody.
Really?
Bruised, yeah.
Bloody?
Bloody, yeah.
Is there a line that you will not cross, Gemini?
Yes, I won't do scat.
Yeah, well, that's a good line.
That's about it.
That's a good line. Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of pain, I mean, you know, like, for instance, you hear the warnings about the people who are into the asphyxiation, for instance,
yes,
that sort of thing,
yes,
which can be very dangerous and can be deadly. I mean, would you go to that close to the line?
I have blacked people out, choked people out, basically. That's what
really?
They want. And
you don't let them tap?
Sometimes,
tap out.
You know, like, they're out for a while.
They want to be choked out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, you have to be very careful about that. A lot of, you know, mistresses won't play with that. It's, you know.
Well, it's very extreme.
You better know what you're doing.
How many people have you killed? Zero?
Today?
Zero. Well,
what about your personal safety? Have you ever, I mean, do you screen these people? Or?
Well, as much as you can, a lot of it is instinctual because you can't, you know, you can never really screen somebody until they get through the door. And I've been very lucky. I do know have mistresses that have been stalked and... Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. Is there anything contractual involved? What's liability like? I mean, I know guys go into it wanting to be hurt, but every once in a while there has to be some guy who gets, you know, jilted or feels scorned about the fact that you hurt him.
No, maybe not enough if I did it.
Slave contracts at all? I know some dominatrix will have a guy actually sign a piece of paper or something, right?
No, I don't.
I want to be kicked in the balls,
you
Kevin.
I need that piece of tape, Mike, when you get a chance. As a matter of fact. But let me go back to the safety thing that Aisa was asking about, because you are, although powerful and dominating, you're very tiny, and it seems like you get a guy who's all excited or something that he might try to, you know, control the situation, take advantage of the situation, and take advantage of you. You don't have security around or somebody just outside the door or anything like that?
No.
You have a stun gun?
No.
It's really not in the nature of a submissive, though, to try to take over,
they're submissive.
Right?
They want to come in and relinquish control, so we don't, you know, unless, you know, they have some serious psychological problems that, you know, they might switch if you did something that they don't like.
Aisa, do you have a stun gun?
Yes, I do.
Yes, okay.
Actually.
All right, let me ask Aisa one question before we break, and we are going to extend. This is such a fascinating topic. We're getting so many great calls. We want to invite you to call in with your question for Mistress Gemini, and her website is MistressGemini.com,
1-800-520-1067.
This weekly. Yeah. Here's my question for you, Aisa, because you have such a great sense of humor and enjoy life so much. Uh-huh. Wouldn't you just crack up in some of the scenarios that we've discussed?
About, yes.
You know, if you were the dominatrix and you were saying something that was kind of outrageous and crazy, wouldn't you just start laughing?
Well, actually, I was thinking about it, thinking, you know, halfway through, I'd probably stop and go, are you serious? You're in a Lammy costume.
Okay. Yeah. You have too good a sense of humor, I think. Plus, not that you do, but you couldn't smoke pot 24 hours a day and be a mistress, right? I said not that you do.
Oh.
Yeah, that might be a drawback. I see. You want to be in control of your faculties. Wait. I don't know if I want to go to a stoned amateur dominatrix.
Want to get some food?
A slave, go get me some ding-dongs.
Dominatrix, dominatrix. Dominatrix, dominatrix, dominatrix. Dominatrix, dominatrix, dominatrix. Oh, dominatrix.
Ask a dominatrix.
Ask a dominatrix.
You know, it's very hard to say dominatrix over and over and over again.
Sounds like it.
It's very difficult.
Sounds like it.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show on the world famous K-Rock. Ask a dominatrix is what's on the table today at 1-800-520-1067. Mistress Gemini sitting around with us here this morning. Fascinating, fascinating story. Kevin and I are crestfallen. We're heartbroken. Yeah. The guys who go to you don't get to have sex with you. I mean, that really does.
And it's always like, seemed to me like, okay, they're going to put up with all that, but then at least there's a payoff.
Well, why would you go just to put up with something? You might as well love the act itself, right?
I don't
just
know.
Waiting for the end of
listen,
something.
I don't have that in me. I don't know.
But if you love it, Ralph, it seems like to me, and I think Kevin as well, that it would be foreplay. That's what's confusing about it to us.
But it's the role. Your role is not, you know, she's not there to please you. You're there to please.
Right. I'm the unobtainable woman.
Well, that's not okay.
It is for some.
Our friend Aisa is here in the studio, too, works in the K-Rock Promotions Department. And it was her idea to get Ask a Dominatrix on the air because she's thinking about getting into the field. And I think some of these questions that people are calling in are very useful to you, Aisa.
Senator Ryder from Arizona.
Yes. I have a question. Does this segment mean that Aisa can beat us when we walk down the hallway and
yes.
stuff?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I think it does.
Oh, that's unacceptable.
Yeah. I'll give you a free lesson.
I really love this woman.
Vicky is on line 3 in Los Angeles. It's Ask a Dominatrix on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Vicky, good morning. You're on the air with Mistress Gemini. Go ahead.
Good morning. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Actually, I just had a question. I was wondering if she has any female clients, Mistress Gemini.
Very rarely get any female clients. They don't really have to pay.
Oh, I see how it works now.
They're married.
Wow, that's strong.
Do you usually go... Are you, like, nicer with them? Do you beat them less? Do you...
less CBT.
I tend to be a little softer with the girls. You know, I mean, I play a lot in my private life, so and I do a lot of videos, so I work with a lot of girls.
You said your slave was female.
No, he's male.
Oh, he's male, okay. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that bought you the Gucci purse?
Yes.
You made him buy a Gucci purse?
I want a slave.
I need a slave as well.
Thank you for the call,
Vicky. You can have one.
Let's bring me weed.
Let's go to Melody in Moreno Valley, kind of on the same topic. Melody, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I was... good morning, by the way.
Hi.
I was curious, have you ever had couples or married couples?
I've played with a few couples, yes.
Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the exception, though? Is it the exception that you have couples?
Yeah, that's
Do you dominate them both, or is there usually...
I did dominate them both. But sometimes you'll get one where, you know, you'll both dominate him. So,
yeah. Melody, is that your idea? Is just for have her hurt your husband and you laugh?
No.
I'm going to do it again. I hate that guy.
I mean, do they sit there or what? Can they do that too as well?
Well, you know, I haven't really played with too many couples, so, but I've... You know. Yeah, sometimes they do.
All right. Thank you for the call.
What about Vince in, it says Woodlands. I can't imagine that's right, is it?
Maybe Woodland Hills.
It's probably Woodland Hills. But
that's what I would hope. Yeah. Vince, good morning. You're on there with Mistress Gemini. Go ahead.
Good morning, everybody.
Hi, Vince.
Good morning, Mrs. Gemini. Yeah, Woodland Hills.
Okay, go ahead.
My question is, my wife is actually friends with Aisa.
Uh-oh.
Yvette, actually... I'm glad he's calling because the whole conversation started with his wife, Yvette.
Ah.
She was we were doing a photo session, and she's a makeup artist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what started it. But really, the whole core is that we started talking about the shoes.
The shoes.
So, yeah.
All about the shoes.
So, is that right? Explain that to me. I don't know what that means.
Well,
the costume's a big part of
what
you do, right?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You're like, in a lot of ways, you're like an actress.
Yes, yeah.
Because you're role-playing.
Yes, a lot of role-playing. Yeah.
Let's play some shit. That's the official theme song. Let's see. Let's
Vince's
go to
his question. By the way, that he didn't get to was Sorry. His wife wants to be a dominatrix,
okay,
and he wants to know if he should be worried about that. Is that?
Yes.
I guess if one partner starts to be interested in this arena and the other isn't, I guess you're going to have trouble just like with any other kind of sexual incompatibility.
Yes, unless you know for certain that the other one wants it.
Aisa, is he kind of a girly man?
No.
All right, he'd be fine then.
He's afraid.
No, she's gorgeous and he's hot. I mean, they'd be great. But
Ozzy in Linwood, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hi, Ozzy.
Ask a dominatrix.
I got a question. I wanted to kind of find out how much money can you make out of all this.
What's
the low? What's the high?
What's the low?
A year, would you guess?
Well, let's see.
I bet it really varies from girl to girl,
too.
Yeah,
the load's probably zero.
Yeah.
It varies from girl to
girl. What do you guess an average would be?
You know, I mean, I don't know what to say. I make six figures.
Nice!
Oh, wow.
The reason,
okay,
the
I quit.
I'm asking,
but I have a website, too.
My name is Gemini.
Okay, wait a minute, wait a minute. The reason you're asking is what, Ozzy?
Because my daughter's name is Gemini. So I'm figuring how much money is she going to be able to make.
Oh, you're creepy, Ozzy. Oh,
what a sick bastard. All right, good. Hey,
come
thanks
see
for calling.
Me, I'll take care of you. Wow.
What do we say? Why take one call?
One call too many.
Do you have your own dungeon, Gemini?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
But some girls have to work out of someone else's
dungeon.
Yeah,
you know, because
right?
It's a lot of money to buy all the equipment and toys. So
how do people find you?
Advertising, you know, through the website, the web.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
there's
you
a magazine.
In,
word of mouth. LA Weekly and stuff like that? No, you'd be in the back of the...
Well, LA Weekly is actually really expensive to advertise in. So,
is it?
Yeah, it's very expensive. It's like $600 for like this little thing like that. But you'll get a lot of traffic from it, you know,
yeah,
because
yes.
it is a lot of it's distribution well.
Right.
For that.
If I were to come over to your dungeon, would it look like, what's the movie that you just saw? Hostel. Would it look like
yeah.
that? Like jail cells and
yeah,
chairs.
That was
and
a little, you know, dirty and, you know, but some.
Saws,
some,
chainsaws.
No.
Knives.
Yeah, maybe actually, just to scare you. Yeah, I have knives.
Great
I have
for
lots
the blood.
Of knives.
What
yeah.
about cleanliness? I mean.
You know, you have to clean everything. You know, I'm very fastidious about yeah. hygiene and.
Cleanliness is next to God. Goddessless.
Goddessless. There we go.
All right, we're almost out of time, Gemini. What would your advice be to Aisa? And to others listening who think, hey, that sounds like something I'd really enjoy, something I'd really like to get into. It seems like it'd be so hard to get started.
You know, there's lots of reading material, lots of books. Can I give my friend a plug?
Sure,
sure,
okay.
Sure.
She wrote a book called How to Be a Dominant Diva. If you go to dominantdiva.com, mm-hmm. and she wrote this really good book for novices and...
We had her on.
I think
the show.
We had her as a guest, actually.
Mrs. Georgia. Yeah.
The Dominant Diva. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had her on the show?
Yeah, yeah.
She's
been a while.
She's a good friend of mine. And she gave lots of different stories to play with.
Yes.
And it was a really good initiation to, you know, to help you ease you into it.
Do you ever give classes? Do you ever teach? If someone wanted to book your time, would you be able to?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you want to pay me my tribute, I'll yeah. I can
third grade class or something, you know?
Bring him in.
Just guest speaker. In.
Career day.
Show and tell. All right. Well, this has been very educational
thank
and
you
informative.
Guys.
Aisa, do you feel like we've taken a good first step for you, my dear?
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. I'm actually going to start out with you all.
Okay, now.
That's what I was afraid of.
Now, tomorrow night, are you coming to the singles party?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you can't hit people.
Yeah.
Yep. You can't hit people.
You
can't
want
hit
it.
Guests.
Kevin, you want it.
I do want it.
He wants
right.
CBT when you get around to it.
All right. And MistressGemini.com is the site if you'd like to find out more about our guest. It's awesome that you came in. We very much
thank
enjoyed you.
You
being here for Ask a Dominatrix, Gemini.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Aisa.
Thank you.
Hands
guys.
Off.
All right. Ahead of going to Mr. James Cameron to talk about Avatar, how about a quick revisit
nope.
to the last time we spoke with
nope.
Mr. Cameron? Do we have that tape up, please, Mike?
Nope. Are you the guy that directed The Abyss?
Yes.
That's pretty interesting.
Oh, my God.
I guess what I'm saying, Kevin, is stay away from that line of questioning. Try
I'd like
to
say,
away.
are you the guy who made Titanic? Try to stay away from that sort of thing. But is he? Because I'm not familiar with
yes,
his
he
work.
Is. All right. We're going to have him in 1 second. Have you been to the internet? Have you seen the trailer? Did you watch this Avatar thing yesterday?
I didn't see the whole thing. I mean, today they're showing 16 minutes of it.
Right. We're going to find out about that. But there's a shorter trailer that was unleashed onto the internets yesterday, and it does look unbelievable. I mean, everything that we've heard appears to be true about him creating an entire world from the ground up. I mean, the guy's a genius, let's face it, when it comes to stuff like this. And I just, man, if we could talk to him and talk to him about Avatar, that would be so sweet.
Well, is that what you guys are aiming for?
Yeah, I mean, we could ask him questions and then he would answer them. Yeah. All right, there he is. We got him now.
Avatar Day is today. Let's find out what it is and why it's already sold out before you heard about it. The great James Cameron joins us back on the Kevin Amin Show. Mr. Cameron, thanks so much for talking to us. How are you today?
How you doing? It's been a while since I've been on the show.
It has, yes.
It has been, and we appreciate you taking out the time. It must be so bizarre for you to work on something so hard and for so long and now have it actually be getting close to being unveiled to the public.
It's a little spooky. You know, the thing that's scariest about movie making is that eventually you do have to show it to people.
Right. And so the longer it takes,
they don't know you, and they don't owe you. And if they don't like what they see, you're dead.
So the longer it takes and the more money it costs, I imagine that would add pressure to the, boy, I sure hope people like it.
Yeah, except, you know, first of all, I've always had faith in this film because, you know, I'm basically a geek fan at heart, and this is a movie I was kind of making for that 14-year-old kid in the back of my mind,
right,
you know, that loved fantasy and science fiction. Still, obviously, I still do, but as a you know, kid in high school, I was reading every damn, you know, fantasy, otherworldly story that I could find, reading comic books and so on. So this is really just the culmination of that for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wanting to share that with, you know, with other people. And, you know, of course, the highest grossing films of all time are, I think, 19 out of 20 of them are all fantasy and science fiction. So I got to assume there's a lot of other geeks out there like me.
Sure.
Huh. Isn't it interesting that the one that's not the fantasy or science fiction is freaking Titanic that you made? How about that?
Yeah, that is quite bizarre. It's really not bizarre for me.
Now, tell me this, because, you know, we've seen, you know, we've had reports for years about the progress of this film, and one of the themes in all of the articles is that James Cameron had to wait for the technology to be invented in order for him to put on the screen what he saw in his mind. Explain that to me.
Well, I think that's been true, you know, of, let's say, The Abyss or Terminator, but in those films, we were right on the cusp of a breakthrough. And that film, within the making of that film, let's say, you know, The Abyss took a year, Terminator 2 took a year. Within that year, we were able to push to the next level and come out with something brand new that people hadn't seen before. So I wanted to do the same thing when I wrote Avatar 14 years ago. I wrote it before I even shot Titanic. It was going to be my next film. And everybody told me, we're not close enough to do it within the time of the film. So I had to put it on hold. But then I start seeing things like, you know, Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings with the Gollum characters.
Right.
Well, there's photoreal CG, you know, a humanoid character. I should be able to do Avatar now.
In layman's terms, then, is that what you were waiting for, is being able to seamlessly put on the screen things that aren't real with people and actors that are real and make it look great?
Absolutely. That's absolutely the goal. You know, we knew that, I mean, sure, we had all these different fearsome creatures that live on this planet. We knew that could be done. But the closer you get to human, the more dangerous it is, because people are very, very analytical about human behavior and speech patterns and eye movements and all that. So we needed to be 100%. You couldn't fail on this.
How do you have the patience to wait that out, though? It seemed like a lot of people tried to make a movie like that and kind of failed during the learning process, and you just said, no, I'm going to wait. How did you do that?
They probably should have waited, too.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know how you do if you have an idea.
Because he doesn't have to work. That's how, Kevin.
Like I was sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring that the technology was ready. I was out building stuff myself, like the 3D camera systems that we needed to make this movie. We were out proving those over a series of expeditions that started in 2001 and went through 2005. And the second I finished that last expedition, I started on Avatar. So for me, it's a kind of seamless track over the last, you know, kind of 7 or 8 years leading to today. You know, it all sort of makes sense. It doesn't make sense from the standpoint of people who are kind of reporting on entertainment, because they just see a big divot
right
between
That's right.
Titanic and now, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And you've been busy. Now, one of the things that the main thing that elevates a great summer popcorn movie to a classic movie is the story. You can have all the special effects in the world you want, but if you don't have a compelling story or interesting characters that are well told, you're not going to get anywhere with it. What do you have going on in Avatar that you're excited about in terms of a storyline?
I think you're exactly right. I mean, people don't really give a dang how it's done as long as it looks great, and then they're just going to want to go on the ride. And in this case, the ride takes you to a planet called Pandora, which is another world sort of conceived in all its detail, every plant, every creature, every landscape. And you go with a guy named Jake Sully, who's played by Sam Worthington, who's a newcomer from Australia. People will recognize him from the fourth Terminator film that was out recently.
Right.
You go with him. He's a vet who was injured in combat, confined to a wheelchair. And when he goes to Pandora as part of the Avatar program, he's able to project his consciousness through a machine into a biological body, a physical body, a genetically engineered body. It's not like going into the Matrix or going into some cyberspace world. And as in his Avatar form,
he gets to live and be whole and be kind of a man again, except, you know, he's 10 feet tall, he's blue, he's got a tail and, you know, has a head like a kind of a blue lion, if you will.
Well, there's negatives to everything.
It's funny because, I mean, we tried to make these aliens kind of cool enough looking that people could, you know, project the fantasy of wanting to be like that.
Right.
You know, as opposed to a really off-putting design with, like, kind of a lot of slime and gills and things like that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, by the way, and I'm sure you, if you didn't see the 60 Minutes piece, I'm sure you're aware of the technology, that the scientists are getting very close. In fact, in some respects, they have figured out a way to let you control machines and things outside of your body with your mind. I mean, your vision of this future is really not that far off on this world.
No, I think we all appreciate that that's sort of where we're going as a society. We're technologically, we're trying to figure out ways to project our consciousness into our technology, whether it's into a gaming universe, whether it's into a Second Life type universe, or whether it's controlling remotely controlled machines. We fight our wars by remote control with unpiloted aerial vehicles. You know, I've spent hundreds of hours flying vehicles underwater by remote control that are, you know, on the end of a fiber optic tether.
Right.
You know,
right.
So you know, it's the whole telepresence mentality, and it's going to be even more pervasive as we go forward.
This is the voice of James Cameron on the phone, Oscar-winning director of Titanic, now back with a new movie called Avatar on December the 18th. Now, that's a ways away, but today is Avatar Day. What's that all about, James?
Well, what we decided to do, we had such a great response at Comic-Con showing 25 minutes of the film to, you know, diehard fans down in San Diego, and in 3D on a giant screen. I thought, well, wait a minute, maybe the first glimpse they get of this movie should be in that same kind of format. So I said, I said to Fox, let's see how many IMAX theaters we can get to go along with us, and let's put this thing out there to the public. We'll actually show them scenes, not a trailer, but part of the movie. And this has never been done before. It's a new idea. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but we certainly sold out quickly enough because they didn't want to have, like, big crazy lines stampeding at the theater. So
right.
They wanted to do it with, you know, reserved tickets.
So if this sounds great to anybody, sorry, unless you already have tickets, it's sold out. How do you pick the portions of the movie that are going to be in it?
Well, we want to not do major plot spoilers, but we want to give you enough grounding in the story that you understand kind of what an avatar is, how the deal works, get you out into the environment, let you meet some of the creatures and some of the kind of the because Pandora is both simultaneously this kind of terrifying, very threatening place, and at the same time, the most exquisitely beautiful place, you know, you've ever seen.
Right.
So, you know, we wanted to give you a glimpse of both and let you meet the really kind of the three main characters, Sigourney's character, Sam Worthington's character, and Zoe Saldana plays an alien warrior girl or hunter girl, and you meet her in the forest, and she's amazing. I think, you know, once she's in the story takes off like a rocket sled.
Beautiful. Listen, I know we're almost out of time. Will it be 2023 before we see another movie from you?
No. Well, I mean, I probably will do some other expedition projects, but you know, it took me a few years in that world, in that world of science and exploration, to kind of, you know, get some street cred as not just some dumb Hollywood puke who is kind of hanging out, but that somebody that could make a contribution. I don't have to go spend 10 years generating that credibility again, so I can bounce back and forth between expedition projects and feature projects. So I'm
at some point, though, at some point, you have to just want to put a camera on two guys in a diner having a conversation, right? I mean, you need to make it a little easier on yourself eventually.
You know, I always think that way when I'm finishing a film, and I think this is madness. Why have I gone through all this? Blah blah blah. But then when I think of the next project and something that will excite me enough to want to go make another movie, it's usually some big damn thing.
All right. That's just how you work. All right.
The film is called Avatar. Look for it the week before Christmas. James Cameron, we don't talk to you nearly often enough. We're huge fans of yours. Thank you so much for coming on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, it's my pleasure always, and let's talk again before the film comes out in December.
Fantastic.
Sounds great. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank
cool.
you. Bye.
Hello, everybody. This is Johnny Knoxville. Merry Christmas. Welcome to a very jackass Christmas. Now, here I am on the roof of this house, and you'll notice that I'm only wearing a Santa hat, a beard, and a jock strap. And at the bottom of this chimney, we placed a fully decorated 8-foot spruce tree. And like old Saint Nick, I'm going to slide down this chimney. Only I'm doing it ass first. Making myself the star on top of the jackass Christmas tree. Don't try this at home, kids. Oh, my ass. Okay, fellas, plug it in. Happy holidays.
This is Quentin Tarantino.
Ezekiel 25:17-17.
And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my fingers upon thee.
Mr. Brown, Mr. White, Mr. Blonde, Mr. Blue, Mr. Orange, Mr. Pink.
Why am I Mr. Pink?
Because you're a fat, all right?
My baby shot me down.
You didn't think it was going to be that easy, did you? No. For a second there? Yeah, I kind of did.
Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof.
This car is 100% death proof. Only to get the benefit of it, honey, you really need to be sitting in my seat.
As a bushwhacking guerrilla army, we're going to be doing one thing, and one thing only. Killing Nazis. Sound good?
Yes, sir!
All that credibility, and then you throw it out the window every time you guest judge on American Idol, Quentin.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you work so hard to make a career, and then you go on and sit with Paula Abdul. What's wrong, dude?
Yeah,
what's
just,
up?
The integrity only goes so far.
You just killed the street cred. Hey, how are you, man? Great to see you again.
It's good to be back. Can I just say, that was a really hot career retrospective. Can I get a CD of that?
Of course. Omar, our guy, made it. Yeah, of course
you
can.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
Very good job. It
is either an AFI award or, unfortunately, we're playing that at your funeral. One of those two things are the only time you ever pull out a retrospective clip. I was
thinking, Quentin, when I knew you were coming in, I remember you telling us about this Inglourious Basterds movie. It seems like 10 years ago you were working on it then. I mean, am I wrong about that, or is this something that's kind of been bubbling under for a long time waiting to get made?
No, it's been in my head for about a decade. Right after Jackie Brown, I came up with the idea, and I came up with a lot of the characters. And you've seen the movie, it's broken down into chapters. So back then, I wrote the first two chapters that kind of introduced a couple of characters. But then I had a different storyline in mind, and the story was just too big. It just wasn't a movie. It was like a mini-series or something. And I even had one of those things, well, what, I'm too big for movies? Movies are just too small for me. that's too puny a canvas for me to even possibly think I can work on.
Sure, you need a bigger canvas, of course.
Yeah, so then I go into Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. And then, so when it came time to come back to it, like in 2008, I said, okay, let me come up with another scenario.
And did you think for a while that you were not going to come back to it, or...?
I had to consider that for a while. I was always thinking about, after this one, I'll go back to it. After that one, I'll go back to it. And at one point, I thought about maybe letting it go. Because, maybe, you know, that was just that time, and that time has passed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I just knew as a writer, it was just inside of me, and it had to come out. Like, you know, I keep using mountain climbing analogies for what it is I do. And it was like, I need to climb this mountain, even if I don't make the movie, just to get it out so I can see what the other mountains are.
Okay.
And then I wrote it, and then I was way into it. All right. But I did have that question with myself.
Are you the kind of guy, though, who has a million ideas that you kind of get started on or make a, you know, write down some notes on and then... maybe they end up being something, and most of the time they don't, though?
No, it's really...
Not really?
No, I have ideas that kind of that float around, and it's more or less... an analogy I used to use a long time ago is, you know, they kind of fight... they jockey for position, and then, you know, some of them need to sit in the incubator for a while.
Right.
And just kind of grow a little bit and, you know, get a little bigger. And so, you know, now some time has passed, some of those... never got out of the incubator.
Right.
But this one was in the incubator for a little bit. And, but, you know, eventually, even like in the case of Kill Bill, I came up with that idea right when we were on the set of Pulp Fiction, but I didn't write it till years later.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Gotcha.
You
gotcha.
Make notes? You have mad notes everywhere all over your house or someplace?
Yeah, well, that one, what it was, in the case of Kill Bill, I actually wrote like what then would have been the first 30 pages. Then I got involved in doing other things and I put it away.
Right.
Why can't you tell a story in under a million words, Quentin? What is it about you that requires you to expand on every thought that comes to you while you're writing?
Well, it's one of those things. Yeah, well, it's like I'm trying to write the film criticism for my movie at the same time that I'm writing the film. Get the review and the movie out of the way at the same time. But it's also one of my character traits is when my characters get into a room, they get comfortable.
Sure.
Yes, they do.
Let's talk for a while.
That's true. But that's also one of the great things about it is that you get to know these characters a lot better than, you know, a lot
than if they were just poorly drawn sketches. Exactly.
And we have bands that come in and they say, we write 12 songs. That's what we do. And then we have other bands that come in and they say, we write 250 songs and use 12 and scrap all the other ones. So it's kind of interesting to hear you're kind of in the middle there.
Yeah, it's like, you know what, actually, on this one of the things, though, I was trying to be really disciplined with this movie because we were trying to make Khan, so I just really didn't have, I didn't have time to write a bunch of scenes that we would, you know, that either, that I'd shoot and then we wouldn't make it in the movie. And it's very easy for my stuff to get out of control, at least on the written page. So, I purposely wanted this script to be less pages than Pulp Fiction. So one of the things that I did, I actually had the script for Pulp Fiction next to me as I was writing. So literally it'd be a situation where like, okay, I'm at page 65 now. Okay, where was I in Pulp Fiction at 65? And I'd look at it.
Right.
So just going to see, am I on the right gauge dramatically as far as the story is concerned? Is this the middle or is this, you know?
Oh, that's interesting.
We are talking to Quentin Tarantino, as if you can't tell, about Inglourious Basterds, currently America's number one film, which, by the
America,
way.
America, the world. Planet the world. Earth.
Thank you.
Planet
the world. Earth. In fact, thank you for leading me into that because this is something I was thinking when I was watching this. I imagine this movie plays like gangbusters in France, but boy, must they hate you in Germany. Has it opened over there yet?
Oh, yeah. No, it's breaking records in Germany. It's doing
really?
Great. Yeah.
How do the Germans deal with – I'd love to know because I really have never been there. How do they deal with the collective knowledge of what Germany did in the 40s?
Well, here's the thing about it. There's a part of me that – because you're not the only one to ask this question. There's a part of me that feels like I'm an ambassador to Germany, but we actually made the movie there. So I had a really good idea about where the Germans are coming from. You know, you just have to understand something. With the possible exception of Jews, if there's anybody in the last three generations that have had fantasies of bringing down the Third Reich, it's going to be the last three generations of Germans.
Yeah, because they've had to carry that weight on their shoulders of something they didn't participate
in.
Have
nothing to do with it. Yeah. I mean, and just even if you think of in the terms of all the German actors I have in the movie, all right, you know, that's not the first time many of them have ever worn Nazi uniforms before. If you're a male German actor, you're probably going to have to put on a Nazi uniform at one point or another. I mean, that's a thing.
Yeah.
That's not something. That's not nothing. That's something.
Yeah.
And what happened at the German premiere in Berlin was kind of amazing. It was, I can't imagine this ever happening again at any other screening because, well, one, there was this thing in the audience that just started building. One, you have all these German actors in the movie and they're scoring like it's crazy. So, I mean, they're really proud of how terrific their actors are. But the other thing is, okay, you know, you get the stuff at the beginning where Aldo Rain is like saying, you know, he's recruiting the bastards and he's like saying, we're going to be cruel to the Germans and the Germans will know who we are. And so now there's a moment where the Germans are cringing in the theater with that. But you have to understand something. Germans are used to cringing when it comes to watching movies, especially when it comes to watching World War II movies. That's their normal state of being, watching a movie like that. But then as it goes on, then the movie starts getting funner to watch. And then it actually starts getting funny. And then there's like, you know, more humor and it's more enjoyable. And then there was this moment in the theater where all of a sudden the Germans realize, hey, we're allowed to laugh with this movie.
Wow.
We're allowed to have a good time. We can watch a World War II movie, and we're allowed to have a good time.
That's interesting.
And it was just, I mean, it was a little like that silly expression, lightning in a bottle, but it was this thing that I don't think I'll ever find in another theater again. It just got more rollicking and more of a concert kind of atmosphere as it went on.
Wow.
And it was really something special.
Well, it is one of the funniest Nazi movies I've ever seen. I mean, I do have to give you credit for that.
That's true.
All right. When Quentin's in, by the way, we never want to take a break, but unfortunately we do have to because we have so many more questions about what's going on with you and with Inglourious Basterds. I mean, we just – everyone in the room has seen the movie, Quentin, and we can't recommend it highly enough to our friends and to our listeners. But we'll take a quick break and come back with more with Quentin Tarantino right after this on The Kevin and Bean.
Weezer on the world-famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ at 927.
You probably heard we ain't in the prisoner-taking business. We in the killing Nazi business. And cousin, businesses are booming.
Oh, yeah.
If you ever want to eat a sauerkraut sandwich again, take your wiener schnitzel-licking finger and point out on this map what I want to know.
I respectfully refuse.
Hey, Donnie! Got a German here wants to die for country. Oblige him.
He is so funny and good. And tell us the story of getting Brad Pitt to play this that you told, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is Quentin Tarantino on the Kevin and Bean Show talking about Inglourious Basterds. Back to you.
Thank you, announcer man. So Brad Pitt.
That's the radio version of a pop-up video.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I just thought people may be hearing the conversation kind of sounded like it started out of nowhere. They may not know you're here or why you were asking you that. So Brad Pitt.
Yeah, well, there's this ugly story going around that I got Brad Pitt drunk in order to get him into the movie. Well, it's you know, like most ugly rumors, it's mm-hmm. partly truth, partly fiction. All right. The thing about it is Brad read the script and he wanted to meet me, and so I go to his house to meet him.
Let me just interrupt. Did you write it for him?
Well, about halfway into it, I started thinking he was probably the only guy who could do it. And so I go to visit him in his place, and his place is in the south of France. And now the thing about it is, his place where he lives is a vineyard.
Ah.
So, yes.
Were you thinking on the way over?
I hope Angelina's home. I hope Angelina's home. I hope she's home.
No, actually, I knew she wasn't because she had literally just had the twins either the day or 2 days before.
Okay.
Okay.
And I remember even like, am I intruding? This is kind of a big time.
Right. Right.
Like, no. I'm glad you came down. Come on. Let's talk about it.
So I'm curious how this stuff works. So he wanted to meet. He read the script, obviously liked it. He said, essentially, let's get together and talk about it. And that's where you sit down as a director and actor and flesh out your visions for the character and see if they're in sync, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a combination of, I already knew he pretty much liked it. So it was more of a situation of, let's talk about the material more in depth. And then let's see if we love each other. Basically, it's that kind
of
thing.
Because you're going to be working together pretty closely for a long time, right?
Exactly. And so I'm there, we open up some bottles of wine, we start talking. So we're talking about the movie, we start talking about life and everything. It's like, are we going to vibe? Are we going to have a good time making this movie together?
Right.
So it's kind of a date, to tell you the truth.
It's an audition for both of you.
It's less of an audition. It's kind of more of a date because he's got the job and I got the job, and it's like, okay, do we like each other?
Right. But let me see if I've got this straight. You spent the night talking?
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah.
All right, so you're talking
about I believe in the long game.
All right, Quentin, are you at the point where it has to, I imagine this is true, but you've got to be at the point where you can get almost anyone you want for your films, right?
Well, I'm in a good situation like that if there's a part out there and I'm interested in an actor or something like that, look, they'll probably read the script.
Right.
You know, I'm in a good situation like that. But one of the reasons I'm in a good situation like that is if I go knocking on your door, then you know I'm serious. I'm not just star hunting. I'm not trying to get you in order to get my movie made. Maybe I don't even like you, but you'll get my movie made.
Right.
I just don't.
You don't need to do that. Yeah.
I don't live in that world, and they know that it really is about character first. So if I'm coming to you, it's because I really think you would have a neat handle on this character. So if you're hearing my knock, it's a knocker of integrity.
Do you get a lot of people that you don't think are right for the part that are beating down your door? That happens a lot too, you have to fend off almost.
Well, you can have a situation where I'm not thinking about somebody, or maybe I don't know somebody's work that well, and they've read the script and they're interested in it. And then,
but that doesn't mean that Lauren Conrad would not have been good for this film, though, right? You're not suggesting that.
But no, but you know what? That actually is kind of how it happened with Diane Kruger. Was the fact that she was interested in the movie.
She earned that.
Every time
that
we say her name, we're going to get
a bell. She's never looked hotter than she does in this movie.
I could not agree more. And but the thing is, she read the part and she was like, oh, I want to play Bridget von Hammersmark. That's me. And I was only casting, you know, characters that were the appropriate nationalities. And so I didn't know she was German. In fact, I didn't believe she was German. I thought she was just making it up.
You thought she was from Troy.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
You got to see her papers?
And, well, she was like, what are you talking about? It's taking me forever to lose this German accent, and now this jerk is saying I'm not German.
Nice.
And but in that case, she literally, well, we were in Berlin. She flew herself to Berlin. Got the, you know, worked the scene over so she had it memorized. And, you know, she was going to get the part or know the reason why by the time she got there.
Wow.
So and so she totally turned me around.
Interesting.
That's impressive.
Now, same thing with Uma Thurman, actually, on Pulp Fiction.
Is
really?
That right?
Really? Yeah.
You didn't see her in that role and she made her presence known.
Yeah, it was actually the story with Uma Thurman it's kind of a funny story. It's one of those Hollywood stories that ended up working out okay, where we go to this agency. And what they do is, you know, they've read your script, so they're going to pitch you a bunch of clients.
Okay.
That's kind of their little meeting. And so one of the guys, one of her agents says, well, what about Uma Thurman for Mia? And I was never really into Uma stuff that much at that time.
Right.
I was like, nah, I don't think she's right for it. And he goes, well, have you ever met her? And I go, no. And he goes, well then, you know, let me set up a dinner. Let me set up a dinner so you can meet her.
But this must happen all the time with you.
Well, this was still fairly new.
It was
back
still
then,
early.
All right?
Okay,
this
yeah.
was early. Right. I just done Reservoir Dogs. I worked out with a bunch of guys.
Okay.
All right.
So dinner with Uma.
The dinner with Uma Thurman thing was new to me.
All right.
And so I'm literally like, okay, well, I could do that, I guess. And then my producer partner was like, no. Quentin does not have time to get together with actresses he's not considering. So no dinner. So then I get back to the office, and by the time I get back to the office, the agent, my assistant comes up to me and says, okay, so the agent is calling to confirm the Uma Thurman dinner for tonight.
For tonight?
Yeah, for tonight.
All right.
And I'm like, well, okay, now I don't want to insult her by canceling the dinner.
Sure.
So, okay, yeah, well, I'll do it. Little to find out later, she had no more interest in meeting me than I had meeting her.
Is that right?
It was truly her agent was working to get us together. And so
had she read the script?
Yeah, she read the script. She saw Reservoir Dogs. She just, yeah, I don't think this guy is going to be the guy for me.
Right, right.
And so we went out to have dinner together, and we just hit it off.
It was a great date.
Yeah, we just hit it off. And also, if you remember in Pulp Fiction, the whole scene is this weird date that her and John Travolta have. It's kind of a strange, awkward date that ends up working out really cool. And
till the end.
Well,
yes.
Until the end.
There's a downside.
You don't mind me bringing that up.
No, it's okay.
And by the way, just as a side note, there is some good behind-the-scenes video on YouTube of Quentin. While you're filming that scene in the diner when they're dancing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And you are dancing like a crazy man.
Oh, yeah. Well,
in
you
this
got,
behind the scenes video. He's directing, but he's also dancing. And
you're keeping the beat. You've got to keep the beat. Actually, the first time I actually went to do that scene, I was operating the camera. And the first time we did it, I just started dancing. And I'm operating. Okay, cut.
I need someone else to hold the camera.
Quentin, let me. This Quentin Tarantino is on the. Oh, I'm sorry. Were we at the end of the story?
Yeah, no, that was the end of the story. Oh, yeah, but
that is fascinating. Yeah. That is fascinating stuff. Quentin is here talking about Inglourious Basterds, currently in theaters. I have to ask you this because you mentioned John Travolta, and he was always a good actor who maybe hadn't been appreciated the way he should have been until you brought that side out of him in Pulp Fiction. You did the same thing with the great Pam Grier and Jackie Brown. Well, the revelation of this movie, of course, is the great Christoph Waltz, who most people have never heard of. They don't know his name, but he's an actor who's been around forever, never, never. Hadn't done an English language movie in 8 or 9 years. How does a guy like that get on your radar, and how do you make that work?
Look, that literally is a situation that is the casting process working out. All right, because you know normally in an American movie or movie with American actors, I know as much if not more than a lot of the different casting directors. I mean, they'll give me their list and I'll give them my list.
Right.
You know, people.
I heard you talking about these lists and they're all pretty much the same.
Yeah, they really are. Actually, oddly enough, the casting director I work with on this one, the American casting director, Joanna Ray, is Aldo Ray's widow.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so she likes a lot of the cool older actors that are kind of out of favor and stuff. David Lynch uses her. And But the thing is, the majority of the time, you go and you meet casting directors, and they all just have the same list. The same list of actors, and they'll have their 10 that are their personal favorites.
Right.
That they sneak in there.
And that's how we see the same actors in movie after movie after movie after movie.
That's it. You know,
Gene Hackman,
yeah,
for example.
You get that situation, especially with character actors, when they finally start doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, well, then they're on that list for 5 or 6 years.
I gotcha.
And then every 6 years, a couple guys drop off of it, a couple more guys add on.
Right.
And that's why you kind of see the same people all the time.
That makes sense.
But Christoph Waltz, I mean, is such a revelation. I mean, I'm sure you heard us talking about it before you came on. I mean, if he doesn't, Carolla was saying the same thing. If this dude doesn't win an Oscar, then they should just shut down the Academy Awards. It's one of the great film performances of all time. And this is a guy who's probably always doing good work, but if you hadn't pulled him into the limelight like this, we wouldn't even know about him.
Yeah, it is one of those things where, like, when he came in, because I wasn't a familiar with him, because he basically does a television, like miniseries.
But you didn't know him either.
No,
you didn't go after him.
No. He just came in, and I'd seen a lot of guys that just weren't pulling it off. So I was starting to get a little desperate, and then he walked in, and literally halfway through the opening scene of him just doing his audition, the opening farmhouse scene, I was like, oh, this is the guy.
Is it always a revelation like that?
Yeah, it is.
A moment like that? Or do you ever go into it and go, I'm not sure I have the right person for this? Or
yeah, it would be hard for me to drop hammer on somebody if I wasn't sure that they were right. You know, I mean, it might not be they did it in the room. It might be you just have a sense of them, their past work.
Yeah.
Or you go out, like I said, you go out and you have drinks with them or something, and you
right.
feel that it's going to be okay. It's, you know, you get a sense.
Okay.
But it doesn't always have to fall down to what they do in the room during an audition.
Right.
But this was a case. But you see, the thing about it is, if you're Christoph Waltz, no, that's the only way you're going to get it. Is you're going
right.
to come in there and you're going to do it.
You're going to
no
slay
BS,
it, right? Yeah.
No get to know me. It's like, I'm going to do it.
For folks who haven't seen the movie, Christoph Waltz plays an SS agent, a colonel with the Nazis, who is so sweet and polite, yet so evil. And
right.
it's just an unbelievable balancing act that he does throughout the whole movie. And the tension that ratchets up in every scene that he's in, that on the surface, just to read it, sounds like it should be just a perfectly normal, regular conversation that nobody needs to be afraid of. But you just know there's bad things happening.
Well, you know, one of the things about Christoph that was really terrific is the fact that he's very, you know, he's very much like Londa as far as, like, Londa's personality traits. Not the obviously
that's
not
his
the,
character. For
yeah,
folks.
Yeah, exactly. Not obviously not the Nazi stuff. It's actually his son is a rabbi, but but you know, there's an eruditeness.
I don't know what
Londa.
That means. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just, you know, a very. What's the best way to describe
that? Gotta dumb it down.
Just cool, detached.
Yeah, cool, detached. Very smart, too smart.
Right.
All right. Too cultured.
Right.
And one of the things that was very funny, though, was just as far as his personality, when he gets to reading the part, I'm blown away. And I'm just like, wow, thank you. You know, I'm like losing it. I'm like, wow, that was fantastic. You gave me my scene back to me. Thank you so much. And he's like, well, you could say all that you want, but it's the material. I just don't believe that an actor is only as good as their material, and you've given me terrific material, so I better be good. You know? And I'm like, well, thank you very much, but you do really have so he just makes this big case about it. It's the material, it's not him.
Right.
And I go, well, thank you very much for that, but no, you do seem to have an internal compass when it comes to this character. And he's like, well, maybe I have a compass, but the North Pole is the North Pole.
He's giving you Londa.
Wow.
And that's Londa. That's what Londa would
that's
say.
That's totally what he does. Absolutely. Right.
So he
wow.
didn't stop.
You know, that's one of the most interesting things about this movie is Brad Pitt's character as well. Super serious stuff. Not fazed by it, kind of lighthearted, goofy.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost.
Well, you know, I mean, that's part, you know, that's part of my my storytelling thing.
You don't see a lot of World War II goofy.
Yeah, you get, yeah, exactly.
Those two don't go together.
Yeah, it's a balance.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's, you know, one of the things I think that's throughout all my movies is I'm getting you to laugh at stuff that's not necessarily funny.
Right.
And
you know, what we try to do on this show every day. It's very hard to do.
We're unsuccessful.
Hey,
successful.
We know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah, we do. We gotcha.
It's a tough gig.
The film is called Inglourious Basterds. It is in theaters now. If you haven't seen it, you are a loser, basically, is what we're telling you. I can't let you go without asking, just because everybody's going to ask us, what are you likely to do next? Are you taking some time off, or where are you right now?
I'm just waiting for this to kind of recede a little bit into the background. All right, so I want to get writing on something sooner than later, but I just kind of need for this to recede. So
need some time.
Right now,
I gotcha.
Those incubating ideas, I thought, well, they're incubating right now.
Gotcha. You give the brother a day off, is what you're saying, right?
Something that you're rolling into. You're just
I have to wait for this to be officially.
And I had to ask you one more question that I forgot earlier. Brad Pitt's head. Why does he have a scar all the way around his head? Like his head came off.
Yeah.
It looks like his head literally popped off his body at some point. It was bizarre.
Okay, I won't tell you how we got it, but okay. I will tell you it is a rope bird.
A rope bird.
It is a rope bird. But I don't explain how it got it.
Okay.
Again, I want you to figure that out yourself.
All right. Hey, you created them. You're allowed. I mean, it's your baby. All right. Always one of our favorite guests, ladies and gentlemen, Quentin Tarantino, stopping by the Kevin and Bean Show today.
Here. Thanks a bunch.
Keep in touch, man. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show, where apparently Kevin would prefer that I get killed rather than make the right choices in my life and remain safe.
That's correct.
I mean, no.
How dare you suggest that?
So here's what happens, kids. I come into work the other day and I say, you know, you don't see very many young, attractive women hitchhiking anymore.
Really? Which, ever? I would say ever.
Yeah.
No.
Not very often, that's for sure.
I don't think I've seen a hitchhiker in 10 years.
Yeah, you don't. You just don't see them around.
It's just not safe anymore to walk along the street and get in a ride from a random stranger. It just seems like it's totally unsafe. So no one does it, especially hot chicks.
Well, where I live in Washington State, hitchhikers are pretty common. And particularly on the island, there are miles of roads with nothing. You know, I mean, it's
hey,
just...
I saw Rambo. You don't have to tell me. I know what it's like up there.
Look, Washington State's the Birkenstock granola capital of the world. You know what I'm saying? Those people are hitching rides every place.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I do see hitchhikers fairly frequently. I never stop and pick them up. I have considered it in the past, particularly if it is especially cold or rainy. I really am tempted, but
well, good.
I
at least you
don't.
Gave it a good long hard think. Right? You drove past them in the downpour, in the freezing
yes.
downpour.
At least you felt bad while driving past them.
That's great.
No, I didn't say I felt bad. I just said I'd thought about it before I decided not to. But the other day, I got to be honest, I was pretty close to pulling over because it was a nice, sunny, warm day, and I'm out with Veruca, one of my puppies, and we're driving down the road, and we see this. I mean, she must have been, I don't know, 22 or something like that. Look like a college girl. Very, very pretty.
Right.
And she's walking down the street, and you know, she could see me coming from some distance, and she turned when she heard my car, and she put out her thumb, and she's ready to hitchhike. And, of course, you know, you got a million things going through your mind at that moment. What do you do?
Here's the only thing going through my mind.
I
you know why, Kevin? Because you have a penis and testicles.
Yeah. I have that. I have all of those things, whatever it is they do. But what I also have is an acknowledgement that there are many more ways it could go badly than it could go well.
You are a coward, sir.
What? Yeah, see, I think
wait,
about
how my, many how I, many ways could it go badly?
How many ways could it go well, though? That's what you need to focus on.
I'm saying focus on both.
There's a lot of ways it could go badly. I mean, for starters, she could have a gun. It could be a ruse. She could have somebody in the bushes. When you pull over to let her in, there's some guy who jumps out of the bushes who carjacks you. She could there's lots
that's
of things
it,
to go.
Though. You're out now.
You've reached the max.
That's it.
I could let her in the car, and 30 seconds later, as I'm driving down the road, pass. No?
No. Yeah. Nope, not that.
Pass in the opposite direction, a neighbor or friend who then says, why does Bean have a hot 22-year-old in his car? What's that all about? Where's that going? Rumors spread. Phone calls are made.
Are you kidding me?
What the hell?
They would have to know there's nothing going on between you and a hot 22-year-old. There's no way anyone who knows you would say something illicit's going on there. That's, oh, he must be giving her a ride. That's the only thing that would come to their mind.
The last thing I need is a phone call to Donna that says, hey, so who's the woman I saw Bean in the car with? I mean, it's not worth having to then explain, oh, I just picked up a hitchhiker and gave her a ride. There's just not even worth trying to go down that path.
But you guys, if you say that's the last thing that would ever happen, then why is he picking her up? Because it's not going to happen. It's Bean. It's
right.
Not,
at least you give yourself at least the company of an attractive woman sitting next to you. That's as good as it gets for Bean.
Right.
How can he pass up that?
Nothing's going to happen, but at least she'll be sitting in the same car with him.
Right.
But
so he doesn't have to read about it. He'll meet an actual hot chick.
But it's all downside for him.
No!
At least for some other
That's
people,
my point.
Maybe
it's all downside.
Something might maybe happen, but not for Bean.
Bean has a hot chick in his car for, you know, a minute. That's huge for him.
And he just lives on that for the rest of his life.
And then at least there's another girl in the car that can hold down his skirt as it blows up with the wind coming through the window.
All right, let me ask you guys. Take me out of the equation. Kevin, it's you this time.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, you're going down the road and you're in my exact same situation. Do you stop, honestly?
Hey, you
honestly
ride?
Now.
You need
not for comedy. Do you stop and let her in the car?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
for
so.
For reals?
Yeah, I think so.
Me too. I've done it plenty of times.
Ralph?
You have? Plenty of times. I used to, in the good old days, when I was single, I was driving a convertible. I would pull up to bus stops if there was an attractive girl at the bus stop and offer to drive her wherever she wanted to go.
Wow.
Did it several times.
That would be the opposite of Bean.
to varying degrees of success, but still, it was always fun.
But there wouldn't be any kind of thought in the back of your mind that there's a lot of potential downside from that person or
there's
what they may be bringing
in. There's potential downside to everything in the world.
I would think that for 1 second and go, oh, that's not going to happen.
You know what? You got to live life.
I prefer to live in a bubble. How about you, Psycho Mike? What do you do if you're me?
I actually see hitchhikers almost every day over by the beach. Yeah, in Santa Monica and Venice, it's also a big, heavy patchouli, you know, kind of granola, Birkenstock play. And so I see hitchhikers every day, and they're always ugly hippies. If it was a hot chick, I guarantee I'd pull over. And it's just my boner taking over. I wouldn't think about it. I know there's probably downsides, but if I see a hot chick and she's got her thumb up ready for a ride, I just, without thinking, I'd pull over.
And attractive people are rarely evil.
It's usually the ugly ones that are evil. Huh. I've found.
Especially women.
Yeah, so you can bet on the fact that because
the
she's
odds
attractive,
of her being hot and evil are very slim.
It's a very small subset of.
Because even Charlize Theron, when she was a murderous hitchhiker hooker, they had to ugly her up because good-looking people don't do evil.
That is
interesting.
True. We've learned that.
All right,
and to be evil, you have to be a little smart, and most hot chicks are not.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a perfect.
Now we're going there now.
All right, listen, we're going to take calls if you have thoughts on the decision that I made versus what the guys would have had me do. We want to hear about that at 1-800-520-1067. And we also want to hear your stories of hitchhikers, like you've picked them up and what happened, or you've been hitchhiking and something happened. We want to hear what, because let's face it, hitchhiking, not really going on all the time everywhere anymore like it used to.
Let me squeeze in before we take a break. Philip. Hi, Philip.
Hi.
You picked up a hitchhiker?
Yes. I picked one up in Wairika, California, and drove her all the way to Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
You are a saint.
What?
Was she hot?
Must have been.
No, crazy ugly. Also crazy insane.
Well, don't pick those up.
Well, I didn't know she was insane.
But you knew she was ugly.
How did you
say? I thought it was heat stroke at first.
How did you find out that she was
heat
crazy?
Stroke.
Oh, well, the first thing she told me when she got in the car was, I'm not a prostitute.
Okay.
And my response was,
get out.
Well, I'm not one either.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right.
And then she continued on. She passed out at a certain point, and then
and then she became a prostitute.
Uh-huh. No,
gas, grass, or ass. Nobody rides for free.
No, she woke up later, and she basically kept telling me about she was shooting down the angels outside the car with the lasers from her eyes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Wow.
See, that's
her. I would have picked up.
That's great. She was shooting laser beams out of her eyes and hitting angels.
Apparently, I missed them. I didn't see them while she was shooting them.
Yeah, wow. That's a James Blunt song.
She also kept saying she was going upstairs. We're in the car this time. She's telling me she's going upstairs. And then she was saying when she gets out of the car, she's going to kill herself. But first she wants to tell her son that she's, you know, loves him or whatever.
All right, you're bumming me out, Philip.
Wow.
It was
not
a good story. Funny.
This is not
good.
It's pathetic, but it was funny, he said.
Philip,
I want to hear. Before you found out all this stuff about her, though, tell me about the thought process when you came around that corner or down that road, you saw that there was somebody hitchhiking. What went through your mind, and how did you make the decision to stop and give her a ride?
Well, she was clearly a bag lady, and it was like 98 degrees in Wairika, California, and she was out basically in the middle of the desert. And I felt bad. I was like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And plus, you would have had all those angels to deal with had she not shot them down outside your car.
It would have been, you know, buzzing around the car.
Hey, Philip, that's what your trunk is for, by the way. when you get an ugly, smelly bag lady and you want to give her a ride, that's why God invented trunks.
All right. Thank you for the call. Your call's coming up next. We want to hear your hitchhiker stories, or if you have comments about my hot 22-year-old hitchhiker, give us a call, 1-800-520-1067. We'll talk to you coming up on the Kevin and Bean. We're talking about my decision to not pick up a what apparently was a 22-year-old or so hot female hitchhiker the other day. I just thought there were too many downsides. Listen to this Facebook message that we just got. Hey, guys, I was going home around 9 o'clock from my office in downtown L.A., and there was this girl that waved me down when I was at a stoplight. She was across the street from City Hall. She looked like she just came from a club. She said she needed a ride to her house, which was about a mile away. Well, apparently she had just gotten out of jail from a DUI. She even showed me the ticket. So being a nice guy, I mean a horny guy, I gave her a ride home. She hooked me up with some good weed, and then we hooked up after that.
How do you like that?
How's that? That's what happened to Timo.
And that's what you don't want to happen.
That's what happens when you open your heart.
So we're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. I feel like I made the right decision, but I want to hear from you guys what your hitchhiking experience has been.
By the way, Bean has driven past that same hot chick twice.
Twice he's passed
her. He had another shot at it.
Now, she wasn't hitchhiking the second time. She's just walking the second time.
But you know she wanted a ride.
How do you mean that?
You know.
Let's try Lucy on line two, by the way. She's got a story of what can happen if you pick up a hitchhiker. Hey, Lucy, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hi.
Hi, Lucy.
Hi. Actually, I was hitchhiking.
Yes.
Oh, and,
you're the hitchhiker. Okay.
So you're the hot young hitchhiker by the side of the road.
Actually, it was me and three of my girlfriends. And we were in
Bonus.
Havasu.
Boing. You were in Havasu, yes.
Yeah.
We were in Havasu. So we figured there's three of us, no problem if we get in a car with one guy, you know, what's going
to
happen?
Right, you could beat him up if you needed to.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we get in the car, this guy picks us up, and we start driving, and we're like, oh, thanks so much for picking us up. It's so much
How can
now.
We ever pay you back, right. sir?
We don't have any money.
Yeah. Not quite. It was just really hot out, and we were far from our campsite, so... we're like, oh, how is your day going? And he's like, not so good. I've been, you know.
All right, we don't need any of this, Lucy. Just get to the part.
So he has this shirt on his lap, and he takes it off, and he's completely naked, and he starts pleasuring himself.
Oh, right then. Yes.
Okay, so then what?
Oh, Ralph.
He's not touching them. He's not touching those girls.
No. Oh, that's
He's in his car just spending some time with himself.
Well, within his
rights. That's right. None of your beeswax what he's doing, young lady. Man.
Did you get him to pull over?
We're all, like, not looking at him. Like, we don't know what to do. Nothing like this. Ever. We were not expecting that.
Right.
And he asks us, I'm sorry, is this making you uncomfortable?
Oh, listen, this isn't, you guys don't.
Do you mind if I smoke?
This is cool, right?
So we're like, yeah, kind of. So he puts his shirt back on his lap, but he's still doing it.
All right. Did you get him to pull over and let you out?
Yeah, at that point, we're like, yeah, you can just let us off right here.
Yeah.
And so he looked confused, pulled over, and we got out.
See, it's different, though.
How rude of you, by the way.
It's different, though, being a hot chick. Hitchhiking. I would never do that if I was a hot chick.
No.
Ever.
Well, yeah, but we figured,
but three of you, of course.
That would happen.
Of course.
Like,
see, this is, but this is why women are no goddamn good. That's what I've been telling you for years. She got a ride and a floor show, yet she's still bitching about it.
Wow.
Oh, hey.
I'm with you, Lucy. You should have gotten out right away.
Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's try Brandon. He's got a complaint. He's on line three on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Brandon, thanks for holding on. What's going on, dude?
Hey, you know what, Bean? I've decided you're not capable to make the proper decision. And since you're like a Twitter freak, you should live your life as like a choose your own adventure. But instead, you tweet the situation.
I like it.
And we will respond to how you should act on it.
But then you'll have to follow Bean's Twitter.
But then you would
kill yourself.
All right, I mean, Brandon, let me ask you more to the point. Why do you think I made the wrong decision in not picking the young lady up?
Because this is like the start of a porno that every guy is just waiting to happen. And it happens to you, and you just drive on by like, that's going to happen. But
yeah. I think you guys are confusing real life with porn, though.
Sometimes
we're confusing real life with your life. I think that's the problem.
Sometimes they intersect. Sometimes real life and porn come together in a beautiful way.
Thank you for the call.
The bottom line being is, you're right. The chances of that turning into a porno situation are low.
I didn't want it to turn into that situation.
Well, that's not what I was looking for.
Because I was going to say, the chances are even lower if you just drive on by. There's no chance. But you don't want a chance.
That's, I probably won't hit a home run, so I'll never swing at a baseball.
What about Emily, attorney, listening to the Kevin and Bean Show, who writes this? Bean, you are totally right. I'm a district attorney and just had a case where a really cute girl pretended to need directions. Then when the man rolled down his window to help her, she pulled a gun on him. Her companion came up to the driver's side, pushed the driver into the backseat, and took them with him. Don't pick up anyone ever, says Emily. How about that?
She's a lawyer.
She's a lawyer.
Lawyers suck. They take the fun out of everything.
There's no upside for lawyers ever. There's only downside.
Oh, one thing bad happened. No one can ever do it again.
Nobody ever do that.
I hate.
All right, lawyers. Let's talk to, can we talk to Travis real quick? He's on line six, and then we're almost out of time. Hey, Travis, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. What do you think?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Okay.
Well, you know, I used to always pick up hitchhikers when I leave my town where I went to school to go to work, and there's nothing on the road except for a men's colony and a jail. So, you know, they'll always be driving. They hear all these, like, you know, crazy stories about how they get arrested or what they do.
Wait a minute.
Hold on.
Wait a minute. You would drive through an area where there was only a prison and pick up hitchhikers?
Yeah.
You pick up the dudes.
Aren't there signs alongside those roads that say this is in the area of a prison, don't pick anyone up?
But, you know, you're 21. You want to hear some funny stories. It's 7 in the morning, you know. You know,
were you struggling with your homosexuality at that point, or what were you? What exactly were you looking for?
No, you know, like they had to walk like 15 miles to the nearest town, so I'd be like, "Hey, I'll give this guy a lift." You know, it's the nearest town, and whatnot.
Yeah,
well, but then you know, somebody was telling me about you know a couple years earlier,
yeah.
All these college students were missing, kidnapped, and
right.
found dead.
Yeah, but Travis, you know, so Travis, kind
of, I'm sorry they didn't get you, Travis, because you're killing me with your story.
you were picking up prisoners. You're really, really forcing bad things to happen. Right? I mean, Bean's not going outside of a women's prison. It's just an island.
All right, thanks for calling. Wow, I wish they'd killed him on the car on the road.
Shall we end on a happy note?
Yes, please.
Adam in on line four. I think this is going to make everyone feel good about the whole conversation.
Bring it home, Adam.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Tell Bean what he's missing out on.
All right, just got in my car, turned it on, and I heard you guys talking about this. I'm like laughing. I'm like, I got a story for them. And I called and I got through.
All right. So, tell us the story.
All right, now we're up to date on how you got to us.
Okay. So I'm driving home from Knoxville Farm 8 years ago when I used to work there. And I was driving home and I was driving.
All right, we don't need any of this. Get right to the part that's relevant.
An area where there was clubs. Well, there was two girls that needed a ride. So
right.
I'm assuming they just got out of the club. They're drunk. Next
right.
thing you know, I'm driving them home.
Good man.
And next thing you know, we're having a threesome.
Booyaka!
There you go.
Yeah!
It does happen, and I'm going to take that to the grave with me and tell all my kids and my grandkids about it.
You're absolutely
yes, you
right.
Are.
You're going to tell
you,
your grandkids
sir,
about it.
Are a man. Yes,
because little kids love stories from your grandpa about their sex life.
They really enjoy.
They're
that.
Listening whether they like it or not.
It's not that Keanu Reeves is awful in every movie that he's in. I mean, I have to give him props that he was great in The Matrix.
Yeah,
maybe that's just a role that was custom made for the amount of acting that Keanu Reeves is able to do.
But The Matrix also didn't depend on his acting. It
right.
was all the bizarre story and the special effects, everything went along with that. It kind of covered him up.
But and by all accounts, he's the nicest guy in the world, too. People who know Keanu Reeves say he is a great guy. But he is still a terrible actor, leading to the exchange that we had on this show a number of years ago. Many people believe, I'm one of them, that you are the worst actor of your generation. Is this some way to wash
have
the
you
bad...
seen River's Edge? Have you seen Tune In Tomorrow or Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
You know what I saw? I saw Dracula, Much Ado About Nothing, and Little Buddha. That's all I've seen. I got to be honest. Maybe it's not your best work.
Yo, you didn't like Little Buddha?
Well, I didn't think you were good in it. Okay, so
having
said that, though, now our prayers may be answered because there's a report that Ralph did on the Showbiz Beat yesterday that he is talking about quitting acting and becoming a chef. Like, that'll be his new career, is to cook, which is perfect.
That would be so great.
Yeah.
Because we don't ever have to see him at the movies again. So we thought, let's find out what the real deal is. We've got Mr. Keanu Reeves himself on the line on the Kevin and Bean Show now. Hey, Keanu.
Yes.
What are you doing?
What's going on?
I'm here in my kitchen.
Oh, you're cooking right now.
I'm cooking as we speak.
Okay.
Or am I?
That sounds like it.
Sounds like you would know.
Why don't you just tell us?
I am.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So what is it about? Well, first of all, what turned on the cooking switch for you? Why all of a sudden are you so interested in preparing food?
Yes. The cooking switch.
Right.
Whoa. Yes.
What changed for you?
I read a book.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's it?
Called Molecular Gastronomy.
Okay.
It's by a professor from France called Hervé Thies.
Okay. And it's about exploring the science of flavor.
Okay.
Perspectives on culinary history.
So you read that, and now you want to quit acting and become a chef?
Ah, yes. Whoa. It has changed my life.
Okay, but
now,
why can't...
Now I'm dedicating myself to the art of culinary development.
But don't you have a lot of downtime on movie sets? I don't know why I'm trying to talk you back into acting, but don't you have time to do both?
I find that acting is no longer satisfying for my soul.
I see.
That I must now create a different kind of art using the magic of flavor.
What are you doing right there in the kitchen? It sounds like there's quite a lot going on.
I'm preparing the menu for my new restaurant that I'm opening.
Oh, you're opening a restaurant?
I am.
Awesome.
I'm opening my brand new restaurant. I hope you'll all come. The Day the Earth Stood Grill.
Perfect.
Hope you all... I'm opening it today, and we're just serving lunch today, and that'll be the first sort of tryout for the restaurant, but I'm very excited about the menu.
Okay, what's on it? What's on it for today, lunch?
Today, for the Bram Stoker's Dracula lunch...
Come on.
You get your choice of Bill and Ted's Excellent Casserole.
Oh.
Or... Liver's Edge, which of course is a fine beef liver sautéed lightly in olive oil, served with a side of my own private Idaho potatoes.
Oh, you know, okay. You don't have to work your movie titles into every sentence.
Ah, or do I?
It seems like you do, but I'm saying you don't.
Ah, or do I?
Okay.
Is that really the only reason you wanted to have a restaurant? Is because how funny the names are?
Whoa, that is really unfair. This is my art.
Right.
I put my soul into this food. For dessert, you get a choice of a fine selection of cheeses.
Okay.
Including Little Gouda. Or perhaps you'd like point cake.
Wow.
We have two choices. What? Wow. What's the wow?
Point cake.
You're not welcome in my restaurant.
Oh, it hasn't even opened yet.
It's already keeping cake. You can have the carrot. Or a Scanner Darkly Chocolate. Or you can choose the Souffle Tricks. But if you order that, please ask 20 minutes ahead of time because it does take some time to make.
Sure.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. So lunch today, and then we'll see how it goes. That's the plan, Keanu?
Or is it?
Or is
you
it?
You just said it was.
Yeah, it is the plan.
It is the plan. This is the Kevin and Bean Show, and Adam Carolla is in our studios this morning, as he is every Friday, for This Week in Rage.
It's time for This Week
in Rage.
All right, starting off at number three, going down to number one. I know you guys have had an impacted ass full of Levi Johnson.
Oh,
but
you are not kidding.
I was watching Entertainment Tonight last night, and it was like every other goddamn celebrity died in a plane crash the day before, and all we had to talk about was Levi Johnson and his Playgirl shoot. And let me just say this about Playgirl.
Let me just butt in real quick. For those of you who don't recognize the name, this is the dude that knocked up the daughter of Sarah Palin, who was running to be the vice president.
Yes, sorry.
Douchebag. All right,
he's all over them. I close my eyes and I see it. The wind whispers his name. I can't get away from this a-hole. He's such a douche, too. And the thing, also, it's like, there shouldn't be this much about this guy. Obviously, he doesn't bring anything to the table.
No matter what.
Yeah. Let's play, by the way, a few clips from Entertainment Tonight.
Okay.
I have this is just last night, just in one show. And by the way, I had to thin the herd. There were 40 clips of him.
Wow.
Let's hear the first one.
Plus, Levi Johnston's stunning reaction when we show him his Playgirl pictures for the very first time.
Plus, hey, E.T., come join me in the shower.
You want me to keep going, or is that the first one?
Yeah, play the next one. Play the next
one. Did Levi make a mistake posing for Playgirl?
Naked? I was naked.
You had nothing on.
Yeah.
Levi sees his Playgirl shower pictures for the first time.
And tomorrow on
right, hold on. First off, that's a tough draw as a dude when you got to go interview the guy. Right. You were naked? Yeah, I was naked. What's your pecker look like? I don't know.
No,
I'm out of questions.
Right?
Yeah. Can I talk to some dignity? What? I wanted to be Christian Amanpour when I left college, and this is it. I'm talking to a 19-year-old hockey player about his honker. So you knew you were naked? Yes, after. What was it like being naked in the shower? Normally, I take a shower and bib overalls, but this is interesting. You were nude. What was your reaction to your own honker after you saw it? Wow, this is hard-hitting stuff. Where'd this guy go to journalism school? So sad. And let me just say this about Playgirl. You know, everyone does this thing with Hugh Hefner, and we all worship at the altar of Hugh Hefner, and oh, my God, the guy's an institution.
And look what he brought down.
But someone should kick that old man in the nuts for Playgirl.
It's his fault?
Yeah,
he started. It's his thing. You don't connect the two.
No.
He started it?
Well, it's Playgirl. It's him. That's connected to his company. He's made money off it.
But would you rather that we never came out with Playboy just so we didn't have Playgirl?
No, we didn't have to do
Playgirl. It's not like, well, Playgirl was around since the turn of the century. Yeah. And then in 1979, a young upstart named Playboy came out. No, Playboy was around and doing fun. We didn't need the Playgirl. Yeah. I'm just saying, when does the old man get punished for Playgirl? Because we should deduct some points for that one, right, fellas?
Absolutely.
Jesus Christ. All right, so now the very last clip you're going to play is it goes from Levi.
Wait, you got pushed back here.
Ralph's angry.
I have, you know, sir, that Hugh Hefner has nothing to do with Playgirl.
Well, that's
completely separate entity. It's not his magazine.
It's not.
It's not his responsibility. He did not do that.
Really?
Someone else did a faux spin-off magazine for women called Playgirl, but it has nothing to do, it never has anything to do with Hefner Enterprises or Playboy.
Ralph's mad because his subscription... There was a little, you know, this is personal. We lived together.
Right.
The thing used to show up, and then they missed a month, and then he fired off an angry letter to good folks over
at Playgirl. That's why I swapped the Blue Boy, because they're responsible.
I told you, stick with Colt Roundup, you don't go wrong. He'll never let you down.
I just had to defend
Really,
Hef.
They're nothing.
I had to defend Hef.
No
connection.
How do you do that?
No connection.
All right, well, I got to Google it.
Somebody needs points deducted.
Yes.
Someone
needs an apology, I think. Someone has an apology coming. I think it's you, Hef.
How about a lawsuit? If you have Playboy and then someone starts Playgirl, can't you sue that creep?
I'm not that deep into the story. I just know what I know.
He just knows the basic details, which you were unaware
of.
Yes,
all right.
All right.
Now be right all the way back to the green room.
All right.
I got more tape.
Oh, yeah.
Let me know.
The last clip we have here is what we can expect on tomorrow, which is today's Entertainment Tonight. What do we got? What big celebrity are we going from? We're going from Levi Johnson. Now, who are we going to? Let's hear it.
And tomorrow on ET, John Gosselin in Hawaii.
Levi Johnson, eat your heart out.
What is going on? What's happening? At least make a run at the president. Try to shoot the president.
Something. Don't say words like that.
All right, but I'm just saying.
The Secret Service does not appreciate words like
all
that.
All I'm saying is let's know you from something other than just being a bad dad or knocking up some chick in Anchorage. Please, what have we come to here?
Adam, did you just watch Entertainment Tonight for the first time in a while?
I've been watching, but I know it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible. But they float a little, just a little bit of George Clooney news.
Right.
Hey, got in a motorcycle accident in Italy. Something.
Right.
This is it. All right, I'm disgusted to all of yous. I'll be fast now. Number two.
We have time. Take your time.
All right, something I've been thinking about. You know, remember when you were a kid and they'd do commercials for things and they'd say, collect and trade, collect them all. But they would always say collect and then they'd say, and trade.
Right.
We don't have and trade anymore. I think this is why all our kids are a-holes. We used to trade. We used to interact. Like, you'd get the whole thing of BattleBots or whatever, Pogs or whatever the hell you had.
Right.
And then you'd get together with the other friends, and you would trade them. You'd do that with, like, playing cards and baseball cards and stuff like that. There's no trade on any kids' commercials anymore. It's just hoard.
Just collect
and hoard. And if anyone gets near them, you throw an elbow into their ribs and stomp in their face and then keep more of their crap. And then take their crap. Actually, smack them down and take their ass. What happened to the trade part? Collecting and the trading. Mm. That's the yin and the yang of being a kid. The collect and the trade.
Share.
Yes, we're not collecting. We're collecting. We ain't trading.
That did quietly go away at some point.
It quietly got lopped off the end. Yeah, I don't know what happened to the trade part. Mm. Now it's just hoard and hoard some more. I want the trade brought back. I think kids need that. You get together. You got one, I got one. I'm missing this one. Take this one. Collect and trade. All right. And number one.
a little something. Now, we all know road rage. We've all experienced a road rage. Yep. I experienced last time on the ride in here last Friday, road rape.
Road rape.
I was raped.
How did that happen?
I was raped. Well, I'll tell you how it happens. I had a little time to kill. Yeah. I was a little bit early, believe it or not. I was enjoying Dr. Drew. I haven't heard that chap on the radio before. He's got a good tone.
He does, right?
I was listening to him on the way in last Friday, and I realized I had 15 minutes to kill, and I came upon the Golden Arches.
Okay.
I was going down westbound on Olympic. I was going to turn down Fairfax, and I said, no, I'm going to the Golden Arches. And all of a sudden, Pontiac pulled in front of me. Sunfire, Sunbird, Sun Douche, Sun Trash, Sun something. By the way, don't make a car and don't start it with Sun. It'll always be a pile of crap. But Sun something pulls in front of me, and I think, all right, they're going to turn on the side street. But no, they decide to go through the drive-thru. It's like, oh, crap. Nothing worse than someone pulling in front of you when you're going through the drive-thru.
Right.
But they get in the drive-thru in front of you. Yeah. They queue up in front of you. So now there's an opening. There's a break in the traffic. And I think, turn, bitch. Turn. And I'm assuming, bitch, because I can't see the person's head over their over their headrest. And by the way, it's ironic that every Formula One driver in the world is under 5'9". But once they hit the open highway, no one under 5'9 can drive. What is that?
That's a good
It is a
too.
Weird thing.
All right.
So they don't turn, and they wait some more, and they don't turn, and I'm going, turn, 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 but no turning, and then here comes the next group coming down Olympic, and guess how many people turn into the McDonald's drive-thru in front of me? That's that helpless feeling, and you go, oh, I'm running late, and I got to do a radio show, and they just keep, and then you start sizing them up, and then you get angry at the people that turn in.
Right.
Bitch, what do you need breakfast for? Come on now. Look at you. Come on, you know there's a Danish at work. What are you? You're effing with me. This is personal. You're probably vegan. Come on. And then you start working up these elaborate scenarios. I bet he's on a run. I bet he's on a run for the whole office. Oh, he's on a run for the whole office. Oh, Jesus. God. Jesus, Joseph and Mary. No. And then some other car starts signaling, and you're like, not the drive-thru. Make it the street. Oh, no.
No.
Oh, the humanity. So three cars turn in front of us, and they all queue up in the McDonald's line before we do. They let them in. Now, here's where the raping begins.
Okay.
It started here, but here's where it finishes. The person finally, there's a break in traffic, and the person starts to turn left, and I'm like, all right, one more person. I'm going to be behind. And they go straight, and they go in the parking lot, and instead of turning left and going into the drive-thru, they go straight into the alley behind and make a right and disappear. I was going to say off into the night, but it's 7:30 in the morning. The point is they never went through the drive-thru. They just used it to drive through and go to the alley. They never turned left and went into the... You know when you pull into the parking lot, you can't just keep going straight?
Yeah. Somebody was effing with you.
Road rape! Stopped, blocked. I don't know if that's a C block. Technically, it's an M, my mouth block. Colon block. Something. I was blocked. They stopped and let three people in ahead of me and then didn't even go through the drive-thru.
They must have thought to themselves, this is going to be really funny for the guy behind me.
Nothing short of road rape. Had to take a Silkwood shower when I got home.
Oh, that's a great reference.
Couldn't get clean.
All right. AdamCarolla.com is where you can go for all the information. He's got like 7 podcasts and a bunch of stuff going on. The radio station there, too?
Yeah, good times.
AdamCarolla.com. Thanks for coming in, man. Thanks. People in Texas rule. The Pachaca family is the latest. They say that an image on their pickup truck is a miracle. Here's what happened. A bird pooped on their truck.
That's really not a miracle.
It was a miracle.
And then you have to wash your truck.
I told my brothers, come over here and see what this is. And they say, this is the Virgin Mary.
Okay. Can't you see whatever you want to see in anything? I mean, I could walk out to my driveway right now and be convinced that I saw a llama. I mean, if I wanted to look for one, I could find one.
Well, you happen to have a llama, but
I do. That's a bad example. Yeah. That's a bad example. But I'm just saying, poop. I mean, you could look at this picture of poop, and it could be Robert Pattinson from Twilight if you wanted it to be, right? It's not the Virgin Mary. It's whatever you choose it to be.
Of course.
We just all feel protected, they say. It's a blessing to our family and to everybody that comes to see it. So they put out the word that there's bird poop in the looks like the Virgin Mary. Here's a little bit of the news piece.
Virgin of Guadalupe is just something special to us.
you know, and that's the she's the one that appears when a miracle happens.
Dozens of people are flocking to a home in Bryan, Texas, after a dropping from the heavens made them take notice. That
it wasn't so much from the heavens as it was the butt of a bird.
Dropping, well, it is from a bird, and it first appeared on a family's pickup truck last week. The family says the image of the dropping, take a look at it for yourself, is that of the Virgin Mary. Okay.
As soon as I looked at it, it just gave me chills all over my body. You know, I was like, you know, I just couldn't believe it.
But wouldn't 999 people out of 1,000 walk out and go, damn it, why did the bird have to poop on my truck?
Yes,
and they,
of course.
They'd get rid of it right to the car wash, right?
And on the news piece, they show a picture of the Virgin Mary, and then they show the bird poop. And they kind of move them over so that they're together. The bird poop is kind of like an oblong circle, kind of in the shape of the picture. But
that's it.
I mean,
right?
Far be it from me to say, but it's not the Virgin Mary.
If this is a miracle, they must never wash that off the truck.
Oh, they're not going to.
Ever.
They're not going to. They say they're going to try and remove it.
They're going to take the mirror off the truck and put it on a shelf in their house, Lisa.
Yes, that's what they're saying.
I am so happy.
Now look, here's the thing. We don't want you to misunderstand. There are a lot of people who believe in God. I'm one of them. There are a lot of people who don't believe in God.
It's not about that.
Right. The Virgin Mary, if she was going to show up, I mean, doesn't she have better options than bird poop?
I hope.
And how does that happen? Does she join the poop on the way down? Does she just inhabit the poop once it hits? Is she in the bird? How does that happen exactly?
If she were going to visit me, I would hope at least it were in a grilled cheese sandwich.
Right.
I would like to rate
or
a grilled cheese sandwich.
Or a potato chip or something.
Not poop.
Come on.
By the way, if you've ever had one of these miracle sightings or have some thoughts about those who do, I'd love to hear from you. We have just a couple of minutes on this at 1-800-520-1067. But do you think that these are just people who are deeply religious and are just receptive to these kind of images? Is that what it is? Because I would certainly have never noticed or put two and two together that it looked like anything.
No, but I think there are a lot of religious people who really...
Well, they're definitely looking.
They're not loons.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, it seems like this type of person is so wants to believe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bird poop.
Look,
that's
we
what
need
it
hope
is.
In this in these times,
right.
Kevin.
But we don't. Do we need hope that comes out of a bird? No.
You take it where you can get it.
No. Here's the thing. The family, and Bean, this will give you a little insight into them. They say the image is more than a coincidence because it happened on July 12th. And the family says in Mexico, December 12th. Is celebrated as the Day of the Virgin Guadalupe. So since it's celebrated on the 12th of a month.
A different month?
Yes. 6 months away. Since this happened on the 12th, that clearly says that it's more than a coincidence.
Well, they're not reaching at all.
Not a
bit,
no.
Every book of the Bible has a 12th chapter, too. So, I mean, that basically is saying this is straight from God.
I don't get this. I really don't. So they said, by the way, the news piece said, dozens of people are flocking.
Dozens flocking. That doesn't even
flock?
Make sense.
No.
Some neighbors walked over to look.
But this is one of those deals where, you know, once it makes the local news, people will start lining up and they'll bring their sick and everything else. And I don't know. It's bird poop.
And then maybe that casino will buy the mirror with
sure.
the poop on it.
Sure.
And they'll
That'll
make some
happen.
Money and then they will be blessed. See, Kevin, you don't know.
But if you were to go to these people, the Pachaco family, and I'm sure they're lovely people, and they, you know, they mean the best. But if you were to go to them and say, look, y'all crazy, because this is bird poop, they would think somehow that you were sacrilegious or that you were, you know. Yeah, exactly. Because clearly to them, it's a miracle because they want it to be. But I don't get it. I don't get the people that are driving from all over town to take pictures with it. I don't understand this phenomena at all.
I don't either. And if you were to, if it was the Virgin Mary, could you wash her off with a hose? I doubt it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Maybe give it the hose test. Do you guys remember? I don't remember if it was the Virgin Mary, if it was Jesus in a toilet.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Jesus. Yeah.
And they said, "Well, it goes away if you flush it." When you go, well. Really? Then maybe it isn't Jesus
so much.
Well, there was that family not that long ago, I think it was in Northern California, that had the image of Jesus in a tree, but it was a shadow from a porch light. So if you turn the light off, Jesus goes away.
It went away, yeah.
It's a shadow is what it is.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'd just like to also point out that every single image of Jesus also looks exactly like Charles Manson. I mean, you're just deciding that it's Jesus, but it's basically a guy with long hair is all it is.
It's not Charles Manson either, though. That's the thing. It's neither.
It's no one?
It's just a weird-looking coincidental thing.
Well, tell that to Kevin and Bean listener Andrew on line two, who has a point to differ with you on.
Andrew?
Yes, how's it going, Kevin and Bean?
It's going well. What's happening?
What'd it do?
What'd it do?
I had an image of Jesus Christ. He appeared to me in, with the crown of thorns in complete pain. Like
Now, wait, are you being serious?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I'm being serious.
Because you don't sound like a serious man, I got to be honest.
Where was it?
It was in my bedroom when I was about 19 years old. I remember it. It came. It was just a vision of him in pain. And he, I went to Huntington Beach that day, and I was like, wow. And like a born-again Christian told me like 10 years later why I saw that, because I'm a sinner. And
okay, what was the image on? You said it was in your closet?
It was on a hanger, Bean.
Oh, no, in my room there's a closet, it's a mirror,
mm-hmm.
That's a closet door, and in the top corner of the mirror, his face was, it was like...
So you saw almost like a vision. Was it something that was on the mirror? Was it dirt or shadow?
Oh, no, it was, the mirror's clean, my dad's a Marine, I gotta clean the mirrors, you know?
Sure, of course.
So everything was clean.
Okay.
It was a hallucination, essentially.
It was so clear to me. I mean, my favorite movie, Boondock Saints. I mean, I wish, you know what I mean?
Right. But what we're trying to establish here, if you'd shut up, is that it wasn't something that was on the mirror. It was just something that you imagined that you saw. In other words, it wasn't there 10 minutes later. You couldn't bring people over to show
it
to them.
Right. It was just a vision. I guess it didn't. It wasn't relevant to what you guys were talking
about.
Well,
no. No, it isn't at all. But
and it was the drugs.
No, Andrew. It's no big deal. I mean, and best of luck to you with that. But but the people who see it, like physically, it doesn't make any sense. It's always a shadow or something in a tree.
It's as good as seeing it in a cloud.
Yes,
I mean you can see anything in clouds.
Let's go Manuel. Hi, Manuel.
Yes, how are you guys doing?
We are good.
I work at a park, and actually, it's on a slope. I guess they chopped the tree in half, and mm-hmm. The image of the Virgin Mary stood. Well, I guess, like, people come, they put flowers, they put candles, and, you know, there's people, but they don't tell nobody. I guess it's just, like, the same people, like, so they don't want media coming or something.
So,
I don't know.
So there's a group of people that visit that tree regularly?
Every day. And they have different flowers. They clean it out.
I don't understand. Listen, if you believe in God, that is fantastic. But why can't it just be something in a tree that looks like somebody or something?
Yeah, and why would you assume it's the Virgin Mary?
Well, it's like on the same kind of shape. I'm going to take a picture and I'm going
to... Take a picture and send it to us.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let you guys... You guys, it's kind of weird, but...
I mean, it could be Joan Rivers for all you know. I mean, there's no reason to suspect that it's the Virgin Mary. That's our point, is you look at it and it looks like something. But you determine what it is.
Yeah, I guess it's just for the shape of it, you know.
I'd like to think it's Kobe Bryant. What do you think of that?
Maybe it is. No, maybe it's Kobe Bryant.
I'm suggesting, like Bean said earlier, most people when they... Thank you for the call, Manuel. Most people when they see something like that, they go... Even if they notice it looks like something, they go, wow, bird poop, got to clean it off. And that looks like the Virgin Mary in the tree. But to say that it is a Virgin Mary in a tree is a big leap of faith.
And then start praying there?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a stretch. I don't know if this is related or not, but I just can't help but think a couple of weeks ago when I saw the Cheeto that looked like a moonwalking Michael Jackson on eBay. And I thought, you know what? Really does it? Somebody try it really, really hard to turn it into something that it just isn't.
You know what that is? Cheeto.
Cheeto.
You know what this story is? Bird poop. That's it.
Yeah.
Just bird poop. Good luck with it.
You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. A lot of listeners want to thank you for not interrupting the music, too, Kevin. They appreciate when you give them the chance to hear it all the way to the end.
It's important to me.
So thank you for that. Our friend Rob Dyrdek from the Fantasy Factory on the program today. Also, the Armenian comedian. Fletcher recaps how he almost got arrested Saturday night at the Almost Acoustic Christmas concert. And we'll talk some sports with Matt Money Smith coming up in about a half an hour or so right here on the Tuesday Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, we got to take care of a little bit of business left for us on the Afro line.
Hey, my name is Jim from Fresno, and I'd like to make an instant request. I want to hear Steven Seagal and Spencer Pratt talk about who has accomplished more in their life.
Listen up, everyone!
You instant
make a request.
Instant request! Kevin and Bean's
instant request.
Now, the caller brings up a good point because Spencer Pratt, who's in the studio with us right now from the Hills. Hey, Spence, dog.
Living the dream, kid.
Every time we talk to Spencer, he makes up some other BS thing that he claims to have done or invented or seen or owned. And he just is nothing but a lying, liar, lies. And we found out.
Believe me, it ain't fantasy, kid. It ain't fantasy. I'm really living that life.
Yeah, sure.
And we found out when we watched episode one of Steven Seagal Lawmen, that new reality series, that he is the same thing. And I think that's why the listener wants to find out just who has contributed more to the world. So let's say hello to the great Steven Seagal Lawman on the phone with us as well. Hi, Steven.
That's right. Steven Seagal.
Right. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Let me first say I'm a big fan, Mr. Seagal. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm a big fan of yours too, Spencer.
Wow. Hey, that's awesome, man. All right. Hey, you want to go to Teddy's later? Maybe Ledoux?
I think it'd be great.
All right.
Now, Steven, we couldn't help from noticing in your first show, Lawman, that you have a pretty high view of yourself and your skills.
It's not that I've just accomplished a lot. I've been studying martial arts for 40 years. I've been a cop for 20 years.
Right.
I'm an accomplished blues musician.
No, not accomplished.
I started the Red Lobster restaurant.
That did not happen.
That's impressive, kid.
Ended World War II.
I don't think you ended World War II.
By dropping the bomb.
It wasn't you.
Yeah. That's right. No, I think that's true.
Yeah.
What?
I think he's right because I'm the original editor of Vanity Fair.
I
remember writing about that.
Yeah, I heard that. I enjoyed your work.
And it's cool that you study, martial arts because I do as well. I'm Bruce Lee.
That's what I heard.
What?
I heard you are.
Yeah. How are you, Bruce Lee? He's dead.
You said on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here that you were a black belt. You didn't say you're Bruce Lee.
I'm Bruce Lee and a Russian nesting doll.
Wow.
I'm a rhinestone cowboy, and I invented the cookie.
You invented the cookie?
Yeah.
That's amazing, because I came up with cookie dough ice cream.
Ah, I love that stuff.
And the Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah.
Wow, we wouldn't have this world if we didn't have you two.
I am a founding member of NSYNC, and I'm also radioactive.
I was born in Valhalla.
That's great. I played Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
You captured Billy the Kid.
You didn't.
I did.
None of that happened.
I am the real Santa Claus.
I designed the dreidel.
I discovered the Shroud of Turin.
I was Ava Gabor's lover.
None of this is true. What's wrong with you two?
I gave Tina Fey her scar.
Oh, that's a killer, man.
Yeah, wow. That was me.
I designed Lewis and Clark's wagon.
That's great.
All right.
Okay. We definitely should hang out together, I think.
It sounds like it.
I hear you're the horn player in Enya.
Yeah, sure.
Sounds like you guys have a lot in common.
Sick.
Wow. I heard you live under the sea.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm a window.
That must be cool.
I'm a window? What does that even mean?
It's a window. Right, don't you understand?
But he's not a window. Clearly.
If there's a hole in the wall,
right?
It's made of glass.
Right.
That's
that
him.
Is I.
That's not
very
you.
Very simple to understand.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Of course it does.
All right.
That's right. Steven Seagal.
All right, you guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you. You know, sometimes when it gets to be Christmas time, really, we get pretty tired of people. Don't you think, there's too many people.
Well, I think if Jesus were alive today, that would certainly be his message as well, Kevin, is that if you have the opportunity this holiday season, you should punch someone in the face for Christmas.
Kevin, what are you doing here?
Merry Christmas, Bean.
Merry Christmas? How did you get past the electrified fence?
Rubberized bolt cutters.
And the moat?
Swam. Good thing my pleather jacket is waterproof.
Yeah. So what can I do for you?
Well, it sure is cold out here. Can I come in?
No. Anything else?
Well, we've been partners for a long time, Bean, and I know we don't have much in common. In fact, we don't see eye to eye on anything, really. But this year, I wanted to give you a special Christmas present in person.
Wow, that is really nice, Kevin.
Merry Christmas, Bean.
Merry Christmas, Kevin.
Ow! What the f*** was that all about? Well, I'll tell you, Bean, in a song. I'll punch you in the face for Christmas because you're not like me. You like things that I don't like,
Sometimes we disagree, and so my gut reaction, as crazy as it seems, is to punch you in the face for Christmas and for enjoying the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Oh, hold on a minute. That last line didn't even rhyme.
Okay, never mind.
Merry Christmas, Bean.
Merry Christmas, Captain.
Oh, I forgot to ask how he got across the minefield.
First, though, some unfinished business. And do not worry. Do not reach for your radio dial. We are not going to talk about Michael Jackson. That's behind us. But you know what's not behind us? The bill. How much it cost the city of Los Angeles to host the Michael Jackson funeral and memorial the other day.
And you know who's paying for it? You and I.
Yeah.
That's right.
$1.4 million is what it came out to.
Yay!
Now, California is a state that has been sending out IOUs for the tax refunds.
And laying off people.
And laying off people, yeah.
Closing down courts on alternate Fridays and
Bean,
all sorts
of
things.
Do you know how much California is in debt?
All. I don't know, but it's, you know, millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. They certainly couldn't afford something like this. But as we talked about earlier in the week, what do you do? If somebody dies and they have a memorial service, as the police, you kind of do have to provide crowd control. You don't have much choice. But you would think that either the record companies involved or Michael Jackson's family or AEG, who runs the Staples Center, you think that somebody would step up and pay for it. Well, that has not been the case. So the mayor of Los Angeles, Antonio Villaraigosa, is going directly to the public. There's a PayPal link. They want you, the fine citizens of L.A., to contribute. And we've got the mayor on the phone with us right now to tell us more about this controversial program. Hey, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
What's going on? How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
You sound a little down.
Even your gun sounds down.
True.
What's wrong?
We're in a lot of debt, man.
Right.
We know.
We are a lot of Chick-fil-A. Going Chick-fil-A.
Oh, he's selling Chick-fil-A to raise money.
Are you at the border? Where are you?
You guys want a bacon-wrapped hot dog?
No.
Well, look, that I got. Yes, I do, but that's not going to raise $1.4 million to reimburse the city for how much it costs for the memorial.
I'm trying the best I can. I'm trying to do whatever I can to raise money for the city, but do it honestly, you know? I mean, because obviously, you know, I can make a lot of money real quickly, you know how? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
But right.
I'm trying to go to straight and narrow and do it in an honest manner.
Okay.
You know?
Well, let me ask you this question. Why would you only put out the word through Twitter? Why wouldn't you, I don't know, hold a press conference or get interviewed by the news?
Know, I figure out that the internet is like a good way to communicate with my constituent.
Right, right.
Be accessible, you know? But I even got my own eBay auction of stuff.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, it's www.ebay.com/Jack.
How do you spell that?
eBay?
Yeah. No.
E-B-A-Y.
Right, slash, and then how do you spell J?
Oh, no, you spell it like normal. Y-A-Y-E-A-H. Jerk.
Oh, that's what that is.
Oh,
I have
you
no
mean
idea.
Yeah.
You mean yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
All right, I know that you're asking people to donate through the city's PayPal page, and that's not going so well, but what are you selling on eBay to raise money?
Let's see. You can get a tattoo from the mayor. I do a personal tattoo for you.
You actually tattoo someone.
You can send me your gold.
Are you
I'll melt it down and you give you cash for your gold.
Okay, but then how does the state make any money?
Can you guys hold on one sec?
Yeah.
Hey, man, come here. Hey, come here real quick, man.
What do you want?
Hey, man, what time is it, man? What time is it? Hey, give me that.
Ow!
Yeah, give me your shoes, sir. Wallet. Okay.
Mr. Mayor?
You can't just roll a guy and steal his wallet, Mr. Mayor.
We are about $75 less in debt. Right now.
Please try.
That's going to take you a long time.
I was yesterday I heard you can raise some money at a sperm bank.
Right.
So I took the Raiders media guide and some lube. Made us about $80.
Okay.
Guys, I'm really sorry. If you hold on one more moment.
Okay. What now? What's going on now?
Ma'am, come here.
What do you want?
Can you come here real quick?
Okay.
That's a very nice blouser. Give me a purse.
No!
Mr.
Mayor.
I want to hit a woman, but I'll slap you.
Mr.
Sorry.
Mayor.
No,
come on.
Give me that purse.
You can't raise...
Mr. Mayor.
This is awful.
You can't do that.
Stop crying, bitch. Huh?
You can't mug women on the street.
I was mugging. I was.
You were mugging.
No, I.
And slapping.
How many people do you have to mug
and
slap?
I'm doing a play in the park.
You're not.
It's Othello.
Does anyone else know that?
No. It's rehearsing.
Why don't you sound like this when you talk on TV?
Shut up, asshole.
Okay.
You answer that every time.
All right.
I told you why.
Okay.
All right. Now, look, like I said, all I'm going to do is really focus on getting money back into the city.
But you said legitimately.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, I'm just doing a play in the park.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
Keep your mouth shut. All right. Last time I promised you. Stop your car. Come here. Stop your
car. Hey, get out of the street.
Hold on. Come here. Yeah. Give me the car.
What are you doing?
You're not carjacking.
Oh, no. Mr. Mayor. Oh, my God.
Mr. Mayor.
Woo!
You can't.
Yeah.
How much is that car worth?
At least $80,000. All right.
By the way, tomorrow morning on the Kevin DeBean Morning Show, it's the return of Dave, the King of Mexico, who took today off because he's went to Chicago over the weekend to follow Paramore and No Doubt. He promised us he would come back with an interview with Hayley Williams from Paramore. We'll find out on tomorrow morning show whether that actually happened over the weekend or not. He made it sound like he was going to propose and they were going to run off together. I don't even know what
plans
he had.
He's been saying that forever, and I'm guessing not. But we'll find out tomorrow.
I would be surprised if he got Barry Williams interviewed.
Ralph, I'm a little bit concerned about the topic you are about to discuss here.
This story has been stretched way out of proportion.
It hasn't, first of all. It hasn't even been told yet.
I know, but I did mention it in the office, and I think the reaction I got was out of whack in terms of.
Do you mind if I give
happening.
The headline?
See, their headline is misleading.
No, it isn't.
No, it's
the headline is accurate.
True.
Here's the headline to the story.
All right.
Ralph Garman drinks his own pee.
See? Again, that is misleading because it sounds as if it's some sort of health practice I engage in on a regular basis when you say it that way. You say, Ralph Garman drinks his own pee. Makes it sound like it's part of my health regimen or something.
All right, I'll change
like you're Nick Nolte or something trying to stay alive forever.
Exactly.
Right?
All right, I'll change it.
I do it before I get in my hyperbaric chamber.
Ralph Garman drank his own pee.
There you go.
That's disturbing enough for me, but go ahead.
But it's certainly not voluntary.
How much are you out of alcohol at your house that you're reduced to drinking human urine?
The thing is, my urine is 40 proof.
That's the point.
That's how good it is.
That's true.
No, I was driving in my car.
Yeah.
And I had a bottle of water in one of my cup holders.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm driving along, and I'm on the freeway, so I'm keeping my eye on traffic, and I reach for the bottle of water, and I start drinking. And at that moment, a series of images flashed through my mind like I was Chuck on that show on NBC, and I had the Intersect computer in my brain. Everything started to flash and come together in one split second for me to take that sip. Everything in the past 3 days fell into place for me. In terms of what happened.
So in that one second, you saw the last 3 days.
Yeah, let me back up what happened in that millisecond, how my mind processed what I was doing and what had happened.
Okay.
Flashback 3 days, I was going into a store and I had to go to the bathroom.
Right.
And I had to relieve myself, but I didn't have access to the proper facility.
The store didn't have a bathroom?
No.
Okay.
And I had been in the store before and known I had asked before to use their bathroom, and they said, I'm sorry, you cannot use the bathroom. So I knew I was going to run into trouble.
Okay.
And I happened to have in my car at the time an empty water bottle from water that I had previously ingested that day.
Okay.
So I take the water bottle, mm-hmm. and I fill the water bottle as a source of relief for me.
Mm-hmm.
I screw the cap back on tightly, and I put it in my cup holder, and I say, when I clean out my car and throw the rest of this stuff, I got some papers on the floor and stuff, I'll just throw that in the trash.
So you left
but you didn't put a neon label on it or anything that said, reminder, Ralph, do not drink me.
Yeah, I was all out of neon labels inside the car. I just said, I'll get to it when I get to it.
Unless it's a Gatorade bottle, it's not big enough for me, but go ahead.
Well, there's ways around that kind of thing. So I go into the store, and I go about my business. I go shopping, and days pass, and I hadn't gotten around to cleaning out my car.
So days passed, yes. And that's still in your car.
Yes.
Ew.
What else is in your car? What kind of a
just
slob
trash.
Are you?
Just some trash.
To the ceiling?
But look, I wasn't panicked about it. It's not radioactive or anything. I didn't need to put on a hazmat suit and dispose of it in some sort of lead-lined container.
No, but don't you sealed? It was sealed in a bottle.
It was tightly sealed with the cap on. It was just sitting there.
But don't you want to get it out of your car?
Yeah, but it's not on my mind. It's not preying heavy on my mind. Like, I must get to this.
Maybe it should have been.
When I got to it, I figured I'd get to it.
All right.
It was no
you
rush.
You got to it one sip at a time is how you got to it. But it is
it's fermenting
forward.
At this point into wine. Right?
Flash forward
3 days.
Those 3 days. I grabbed the bottle of the drink. I opened up the cap. I was driving in my car. I was going into a store. I had to
go to the bathroom.
So I knew I was going to run into trouble. An empty water bottle.
Go to the bathroom.
An empty water bottle. I screw the cap back on tightly, and I put it in my cup holder, and I say, well, I clean up my car, and throw the rest of this stuff. I got some papers on the floor and stuff.
I'll just throw that.
I had to. Everything for the past 3 days home to place for me.
What the hell is that smell / taste?
Ew.
And then, as I said, all of the preceding 3 days in a compressed millisecond flashed through my mind. And I knew exactly what I had done.
Wow. Mm.
And so I
spit it back
into the bottle.
Did you finish
it? But that didn't help. It didn't make a difference. And it had been sitting in the hot sun in my car for about 3 days.
Ew.
So gross.
It was
not good?
Well rancid by that point.
I hope you sealed it back up, put it back in the car, figuring you'll throw it away one day.
I want to hold on to it till it becomes a solid. That's what I'm shooting for.
And then one day when you're hungry. Bean, I owe you an apology. I have for a long time insisted that you have Asperger's syndrome.
He does, right? Doesn't he?
Which sounds, no. It sounds, no, like, I don't. Sounds like you're saying burgers like hamburger, but it's ASP, and it's a form of autism.
Burgers, yes.
And I have claimed quite vociferously, if that's a word,
yes,
that Bean has it. It seemed to me like he had it. But I saw a documentary movie about Asperger's syndrome.
Okay. No kidding.
And I realized that I was wrong.
Really?
So I brought in some clips, and I thought...
Well, it's about time, because I've always thought you kind of cobbled your diagnosis together on some pretty flimsy evidence, the truth be told. So I'm happy to hear you finally seen it from my perspective.
All right, so here's some of the audio from the documentary on Asperger's syndrome, and let's compare it to Bean, what we know about Bean, and then we'll see. Okay.
An individual with Asperger's will often have difficulties with social functioning.
Okay. Difficulties with social functioning. He's pretty social.
Well,
I think that's wrong.
With the people he likes, which is like the radio people that aren't us. And,
I'm going to give you that one. I'm not so much very good with the people.
And then
I'll give
he
you
doesn't
that
like anyone else.
Okay. All right. Here's the next one.
Sensory issues are also very common. A child may be oversensitive to light, sound, even smells.
Okay. So Bean, he's not sensitive.
What about temperature?
Oh, no. Not at all.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding
me? It could be any temperature. He doesn't care. Bean doesn't care.
Actually, it's 61, it's the face of the sun hot.
And the rest
he's
of us
a freak.
And the rest of us are going, how does the heat not bother you, Bean? And he just goes, I don't know. It doesn't. It's just really bizarre that way.
I will tell you that there are also times where there'll be a light that I just can't stop staring at.
Yeah.
And it kills me. It just kills me that the light is on in a room sometimes. That
and noise.
All right. So I think we're 0-2.
A little sensitive to noise, I think.
Instead, you're apologizing, Kevin, for all the things you've said.
Right, because this is clearly not the case. So here's the next
Obsessive interests are typical, and this focus on one subject to the exclusion of others often contributes to their social isolation.
Okay, so that is clearly not true.
Yeah, he doesn't get obsessed about things.
He doesn't get obsessed with one topic.
To love Pluto. That doesn't mean that that's not an awesome topic and that everybody shouldn't love Pluto. Come on.
And 7-Eleven.
If a guy was like that, he would be obsessed with Christmas music all year long.
Right.
Or one particular maritime tragedy.
Right.
You know?
The post office.
He's going to be like that.
Too much time on one topic that isolates him from the rest of society.
He doesn't have any of that.
Or one particular actress or weather girl.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Come on.
Yeah, okay.
He's
so here's
got wide-reaching interests that
are the next one.
Evenly spaced.
Your child probably will prefer to play by himself instead of with others.
All right. Well, from what we know about Bean, he's a social butterfly.
Right. If a person had Asperger's, they would move to an island or something to try to isolate themselves from other people.
Exactly.
Yeah. Put up an electric fence and a moat, you mean, like I did?
I apologize for that one. Here's the next one.
He likely will have difficulty making friends. He won't understand social cues.
All right, so difficulty making friends.
Come on, you guys.
Who makes more friends? Who makes better, newer friends than Bean?
And no one is better at picking up subtle social cues than Bean is. Because he'll just look at somebody and say, you know what? I think that person's having a hard time. I can feel their pain. I'm going to try to empathize with them and try to make them feel better and be more respectful of their feelings.
So you can see how wrong we've been.
Yeah. Kevin, in the interest of full disclosure, did you write this documentary?
I did not.
Hire somebody to read it? Because it does sound like all the stuff you've been saying for years.
Most children with Asperger's have special interests that they talk about all the time.
Most Asperger's kids talk about something all the time.
So weird. Well, that's certainly not Bean. Why would he talk about, I don't know, Denny's or the post office or 7-Eleven or Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald or Pluto.
For hours on end.
Christmas music.
It's clearly not
true.
You
guys just make stuff
Finland,
up.
Finland, Norway, Sweden. All right, now let's get to the... to the next thing that is clearly not true of me.
Insistence on sticking to routine helps someone with Asperger's feel grounded. They're often fixated on routines. Even small deviations from routine, such as sitting at a different place around the dinner table, can cause a meltdown.
Okay, so that, we know that's not true of Bean. He's easily moved. I mean, there's no problem with that kind of stuff.
I don't care about routine.
Not at all.
I do tend to have a system that I...
Routine is very unimportant.
Bean was a slave to routine. He would get really freaked out, for instance, when maybe you didn't say what day it was, what day or month it was at the beginning of the show.
Right.
You know, he would freak out and insist that you do it and stop everything and go back and make you do it if he had that. But he doesn't. It rolls off.
He just lets it go.
He's not concerned with that routine.
So what I'm saying is that we've been wrong all along.
Wow. I didn't realize how wrong we were.
Yeah. So, Bean, we apologize. At the end of last year, we were introduced to a cable access TV show called Let's Paint and Exercise and Mix Blended Drinks. And it's hosted by a guy by the name of John Kilduff. Here's a little bit of the audio that we had.
Yes, I'm your host, John Kilduff. We're going to get to painting. We're going to do some exercising. And, of course, we're going to make some wonderful blended drinks.
And I know juices are the way to go. You know, I mean,
definitely.
It keeps you healthy. And this is Santa Monica. Man, gang.
All right, man. Hello, caller.
All right.
Okay, so that's where that came from, by the way. A lot of people wanted to know, where did Santa Monica come from? The people prank calling this TV show. Mm-hmm. So Psycho Mike decided that he needed to be on this program.
Yeah.
Along with DJ Omar, and Psycho Mike has a band called Band Packs.
Yep.
And you were on when? When were you on this program?
Saturday afternoon.
Now, this is a guy who runs on a treadmill and is terribly out of breath.
And he's wearing a three-piece suit, too, usually when he's on the treadmill. And he never stops for the whole show. For all 30 minutes of it, he's running on this treadmill while he's painting and making blended drinks.
And I guess his point is that you can be inspired to do whatever you want to do. But, he's really bad at running on a treadmill. You can tell he's out of shape. B, he's the worst painter I've ever seen. And C, the blended drinks blow.
Here's the thing about John Kilduff, though. You may watch this show. And this is, after Saturday, this is the one thing I came away with that I want to give back to the public. Is that you watch the show and you may think, well, this guy's just putting on an act.
Right.
John Kilduff, 100%, genuinely wants the public to be more motivated and do more with their life, and he sincerely believes that his show is helping, and he is 100% a real dude.
Really?
Because
but how is his show helping, though? I don't look at John and go, I need
three.
I don't look at him and go, I'm going to aspire to be more like this guy on a cable access show.
He thinks that by multitasking in such a unique way that people can look at that and go, wow, well, I could do much more with my life, too. I mean, he really believes that.
Wow. All right. Take us through the thing.
We get there in Band Packs 1, which is our official automobile, a 1988 Cadillac limo that we all funneled in.
Okay.
And we get there, and we have to sign our contracts, and immediately we load up, and we start the show. And this is how Mr. Kilduff opens up.
Band Packs! All right, people. Band Packs is in the house here on this Saturday morning. Wherever you're watching, Happy New Year to you all. Happy 08. If you're watching in 2009 and you're celebrating 2009, happy 2009. This is a celebration of every year, forever and ever. We're celebrating every new year.
I'm sorry, was that DJ Omar Khan?
Yeah, I brought that little drop with me.
And he only played it about 70 times within the half-hour show.
Mike, did he skip the possibility of watching it in 2008?
Yeah,
are you
why
only
2009?
Watching it either at the end of 2007 or 2009, what's that about?
To be honest, I think Kilduff's cognitive function is affected by the fact that he's in horrible shape and is sprinting on a treadmill.
This is the funniest part, is that this is the very beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And he's so out of breath, he may not make it.
And by the way, you'll hear later on in this clip, he's going about 2 miles an hour. Omar is the one who motivates him to try to go faster.
By the way, I brought a fog machine with me.
Right.
So before we start, he's all like, I don't know about that fog, you know, because I'm going to be, you know, running on the treadmill. So as soon as we start the show, I'm all blasting the fog.
Did he ask you to turn it down and you just cranked it?
Yeah, totally.
Nice. All right, here's the rest of the show.
Omar. It may have been a mistake to give Omar a microphone.
I brought my own PA.
You must. What time of the day was this?
11:45.
11 on air. It was
11
on
the morning.
Yeah.
Omar blasted out of his mind.
Hammered.
You gotta go faster.
And that was the theme of the whole show, is Omar's a mental patient. Well, he, John Kilduff has a sidekick by the name of Inga.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Swedish exchange student. And
Dave's nailing her, by the way.
Yeah, he is. This time she wasn't helping making blended drinks. She was making a New Year's pudding pie.
Okay.
And this is Inga.
Yeah. Oh, Inga, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Inga's Swedish pudding.
Inga's pudding!
All right, let's take another call here.
Yeah.
Hi, caller. Welcome to Let's Pay. Cooking our size blood drinks.
Let's go. Oh, what?
DJ Omar Khan.
Okay. Did she say your name?
Yep. And hung up.
And you're yelling?
Yeah.
So basically, you got Psycho Mike going, what? And Omar playing
DJ Omar Khan.
Yeah.
Now, what's the deal? Because it's cable access, there's nobody screening these phone calls, and there's no delay button. People just get on and say whatever they want.
It's
right?
Legal. It's legal. You can say the F word. You can say everything that you want
to
say.
Yeah. And, you won't be able. You won't be able to hear in the phone in the audio I sent in because the audio is so terrible. But I called in three times from inside the studio.
So if you want to watch this, you can go to krock.com, the Kevin and Bean page. The links are up. There's three different links, I think, for what's going on. Okay. What's the next clip?
Inga's resolution for the new year.
I'm sure Inga has something, one of her own kind of resolution.
I would like to make enough money to get breast enlargement.
What? Yes. Yeah.
Are doing nothing but causing noise.
Yeah, dude.
This has ruined the show, is what this
well,
is.
Well, the studio's about 40 square feet, and you've got a full band, a couple producers, cameramen, DJ Omar Khan, John Kilduff, and a Swedish exchange student. So it got a little crazy.
Yeah, hear me rocking a little bit of the Rick James in there, dude?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Kilduff decides to take some
calls. Is he upset with you guys? I mean, is he getting angry because you're clearly trying to sabotage this program?
He just rolls with everything. It's insane. You'll
Doesn't
hear.
Bother him.
This is the truth.
It's
this
insane.
Truth.
It's insane. He, like, really thinks that we are getting our creative juices out there and is really, like, inspired by people getting their creativity going.
So what you two are doing, which is basically ruining his show, he thinks you're helping?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He thinks you're pushing?
He sprints out of the show. As soon as we finish taping, he sprints out. And Omar's like, oh, dude, he's mad at me.
Yeah.
He's mad at me, man.
Yeah.
Omar walks out. He's like,
DJ Omar Khan.
Hey, Kilduff, I'm sorry if I went a little bit overboard. And John Kilduff says to him, it was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. He goes, Omar, don't worry about it, buddy. Everybody wants to be a star.
All right, what's the next clip?
Couple callers.
What do you want to do in the year 2000? What's that?
Washed up has been.
Oh.
What did he say? I couldn't hear.
You washed up has been F.
Oh.
Kilduff, don't let him get you down. You're not a has been.
Oh, car. You're on. What's your resolution?
Hi, you're not a has been because you never accomplished anything.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. Dear God, did you just stop playing? Why would you give Omar his own button?
So Omar, DJ Omar Khan. One of the many times he interrupts the show, he interrupts and he says, John, I actually made a shirt for you and
I
for
made a
this
shirt
show.
For the show. Yes.
You did?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, check it out.
All right.
Get out of here.
Let's be. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's be. What do you think, John? I like it. The creative process leads to more, if you will, because you're happy. And when you're happy, you get more laid.
Yeah, so I take it away. I took a white shirt and I put Let's Paint on the front with a happy face and then on the back in big letters and F with the sad face on the bottom. And he was like, oh,
why is there
cool.
a sad face after the effing?
Because I thought he'd find it
sad.
Okay.
All right.
Inga finished with the pudding and went on to making Swedish meatballs.
More meatballs for everyone.
Someone told us when we were discussing Let's Paint TV last year that Inga is John's wife. Is that true, Mike? Can you verify?
Very much untrue.
Really?
Very true.
Yeah. She's just an actress or what?
Listen, many a times when we were off camera, I went up to Kilduff and I was like, listen, you can. We're off camera now, off the record. Was this an act or is this an... Oh, no, no. Inga's real. I'm an artist. I just want to get my painting out there. And I'm telling you, he's legit because unless he's the greatest character actor... This side of Borat.
Right.
It's legit because he stayed in character and Inga stayed in character for hours beforehand
Inga
and after.
Inga thinks she's helping and doing good work and blah, blah, blah?
I think so.
Wow.
I think so. Here's Inga's recap of the day's show and some more of Inga's pudding.
Well, let's just get a recap of what Inga did here today.
I make pie with pudding pie,
pie
with ball.
Pudding pie with balls. What else, Inga?
It is delicious.
Inga's pie. Really... Inga's pie.
You guys are doing everything you can to drive this man to an early grave, and he seems to like
it.
He's
all good with it, yeah.
It's funny you say that, drive him to an early grave, Kevin, because Omar officially almost killed us.
Uh-oh.
And I mean that literally.
What happened?
Well, we're wrapping up the show, and Kilduff points to Omar and to Banpax, and he says, cut, cut, cut. He's doing this because he wants to wrap up the show. You're given a lot amount of time, and if
he wants his closing thoughts or whatever?
He wants to give his closing thoughts.
Okay.
So he cuts us, and he's giving his closing thoughts, and Omar... thinks it's a great time to light off a big sheet of fireworks.
That's my man.
That's my man.
Now, you know when really extreme things happen in your life? It can happen in a matter of seconds, but it seems like it's an eternity in your brain.
Sure.
Well, I'm standing behind Kilduff at this point. I'm helping him paint. Omar throws the fireworks down by my leg, and they're going to blow me up. And Omar's screaming, Mike,
I'm
Mike,
screaming,
look.
Right? Because I decided to play as my music closed, Kung Fu Fighting.
Okay.
So it's blaring, and Mike's playing his guitar and painting and stuff, and the firecrackers land on his foot.
Right.
And I'm thinking, OS, like, oh my God. And I'm like, Mike, move, move.
So I look down, and as I look down, I think to myself, those are fireworks on a sheet, a painting cloth that is soaked in paint thinner.
Oh, good.
And paint.
I didn't know.
And I watched myself kick over the paint remover like 2 seconds before that. I kicked over the paint remover, and it's all over the floor and all over my leg.
Nice.
Oh my God. So this is all happening. And then the explosion. And you watch this on the video. It is the funniest part of the whole video. You have never seen true fear like John Kilduff when those explode in the studio. It is the funniest thing you'll ever see. Listen.
Okay, everybody. That's it. The show's over.
Oh, no. Massive explosion. Massive, huge.
In a room the size of your kitchen, listeners,
I did
okay?
That specifically for Kevin.
Oh, that. Yeah. You rule.
Yeah.
You rule. We almost burned this place down just before the holidays.
Yeah,
you know. Omar's fireworks.
Yeah.
Well, you will not be invited back.
I doubt that, actually. Yeah. I think Kilduff will have us anytime
and
we want.
And I'm so going to be there. I was out of town, but I did receive this phone call from Omar.
Hey, Kevin. This is Omar. You're a f***. Happy holidays. All right, let's paint TV and all that bullshit. It was, you. Pick up your cell phone.
Plus Matt Money Smith talking about the Lakers and the Houston Rockets on Sunday.
Okay.
How about those Rockets, by the way? Are they that good, Mike, or are they just on a lucky streak?
I think that they're like the Minnesota Twins were last season, where they're a very good team that had a lot of promise going in, and they just didn't really find their niche until late in the season.
Until their center got injured, and then they take off.
That's right. Lose your best, most high-profile player, and then just soar. So anyway, all of that on this morning's Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, the guys are going to make up untrue stories about me.
How dare you suggest that we would even do that? Bean does broadcast from Seattle, mm-hmm. and he works at his home. So anytime you hear like a phone ring or a clock or a doorbell
or a dog bark.
Dogs or anything, it's always coming from his end. Everybody else is here at K-Rock, and the sound is coming from Bean. So yesterday we were doing What It Do Nephew. And I was pretty sure I heard a weed whacker for a while. And so I had to, like, turn down his microphone a little bit because somebody was weed whacking, and I couldn't tell what it was. It sounded like it. And then I heard, like, a lawnmower, and that's when I had to finally say something. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Buddhist monks? Is someone mowing the lawn?
Yeah, sorry, I'm cutting my lawn here outside the studio.
Yeah, apparently it's me. I think I take the blame for this one. Huh. Apparently
really? None of us are mowing the lawn here at the radio station? You're going to have to take the blame for this one? Because last time the lawnmower was me?
Responsibility.
I'm going to have to take the blame on this one, guys. I know Kevin and Lisa's lawn mowing noises have been loud lately, but this one's mine.
I have it done on Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so there's a lot of mowing, and then it all turns ugly.
I think I take the blame for this one. Huh. Apparently, my yard crew just showed up to start mowing the lawn. They have strict, after 10 a.m. only rules, mm-hmm. but for some reason, maybe the time change screwed them up.
Did somebody order Mexican?
Yeah,
that's the problem. You do your show from a hunting blind.
Jesus, stop!
All right, back to you.
Hey, no, not that hedge.
So that's good times right there. And then we were talking to Bean afterwards, and he tells us that Jesus is, I think he's raising money to fly back to Mexico so that he can donate a kidney to save his brother's life.
What? Really?
Yes, that's true.
And then all of a sudden everything changed and we were like, well, why are you yelling at him then? If the poor guy just wants to raise some money so he can go to Mexico and have a kidney taken out of his own body and given to his brother.
Bing.
I was yelling at him because he came before 10 a.m. And right. I know that I'm going to get yelled at by everybody else if there's too much noise on my end. So I just try to make everybody happy. Try to get my yard done after 10. Try to do the radio show before 10. That's all it was.
Mm. We have Jesus on the line. Jesus?
Bueno.
Hey, it's Kevin and Bean. How are you?
I am well. How are you, sir?
Good, thank you.
One second. Let me turn up the lawnmower.
I was going to ask you to do that.
I was working. I'm so sorry, Mr. Bean.
Mr. Oh, it's
Bean,
fine.
I'm so sorry.
It's fine, Jesus. It's not a big deal. I just wanted to let you guys know.
I know you were so angry the other day, and when you hit me like that, I know how angry you are.
Oh, no.
Did he hit you, Jesus? I didn't hit you, Jesus.
Yes, he picked up one of his sheep, and he hit me with it.
He hit you with a sheep.
He beat me with a sheep.
Wow.
I did. That's not what happened at all, Jesus. I was just asking, you know, we've talked about this before, if you and your guys could maybe not mow until after 10 a.m. because we're doing a radio show in here.
I know. Usually I try to always do that, what you ask from me.
Well, what happened?
Mm-hmm. But I am trying to raise money so I can go back to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I have an operation.
Right.
To I know, give, give my kidney to my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So you could... brother.
My brother.
It's very sad.
And, He's not doing well.
Yeah,
I understand that.
He doesn't have long to live.
So there's some kind of time crunch? Is that why
I have to raise as much money as I can for the operation and also for to get back to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And so I must try to squeeze as many loans in as I possibly can in the course of the day.
What did you feel like when Bean started yelling?
I felt guilty and ashamed.
Yeah.
I felt horrible. Because I broke the cardinal rule of no lawn mowing before 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And I know how important it is to him.
Mm-hmm.
And how he has beaten that law into my brain.
So sad.
I thought this one time I could could get away with it because, like I said, I'm trying to raise some money.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't raise it, then my brother will surely perish.
Right.
So you're just out there mowing just 24 hours a day, if that's what it takes, just to get the money together fast enough to get there in time.
Well, you know, I am the oldest of 17 children.
Oh, wow.
And so I try to send the money back to Mexico as well for them to have the food.
Right.
And also to live in a small mud hut that they live in.
Right.
They're trying to put an extension, but mud can be very expensive. And so they need that.
I wasn't aware of that.
Did you say mud could be expensive?
Yes, in Mexico it's very expensive.
Okay.
And so I have other operations scheduled for next week.
You have more than
a
that one?
One?
I'm giving a piece of my liver to my cousin, Rodrigo.
Mm, okay.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
So I have to raise money for that. I'm giving my spleen.
Anyone else needs your spleen?
My sister needs my spleen.
Okay.
Right. Giving her some of that. Also, my grandfather needs a new gallbladder.
Okay.
So I'm giving him a gallbladder from
body. They're just selling you for parts.
Yeah, well, you have anything left, Jesus, at the end of next week?
Oh, like you care.
And
I do. I love Jesus.
Hey, Nana, don't mow till after 10 a.m.
And our burro needs a new heart valve.
A heart valve?
Yes.
For your donkey?
Yes. For the donkey back in Mexico who tends the fields.
Oh.
He needs a new heart valve, so I'm giving him my aorta.
Oh,
so
wow.
I've got a full schedule.
Wow.
Yes, Jesus, you do.
Elective surgery coming up.
I apologize for my man Bean. I mean, I don't think he knew all of that when he started screaming at you and throwing stuff. I don't think he was aware.
It's okay because now I have more time because when he hit me with his sheep, he ruptured my gallbladder.
Right.
So it's not usable anymore for the family.
So who's going to die?
Uh, two or three people.
Oh, that's sad.
They
that's
were
terrible.
All going to hook them up on one gallbladder.
I've never heard of that surgery.
Three of my cousins were going to share my gallbladder.
They were miracles in Mexico.
There's top-notch medical care down in Mexico.
Well, Jesus, let me take this opportunity to apologize.
Let me, please, to you say I am sorry and sincerely apologize.
Don't worry
to you
about it.
For
not
daring to mow grass before 10 a.m.
Yeah, it was like 9:58, by the way. I mean, that's crazy early.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I don't know what I was thinking, and I am sorry, and I cannot apologize enough. But if I will mow your lawn for free forever for the rest
that's
of my
not,
life.
No, that's not necessary at all.
If you
I'm
need any
to pay
body
you.
Parts at all, I hope you'll feel free to ask me so I can somehow make up to you the horrible sin I have done.
Not a problem.
Because I know you work so hard. You get on the radio and you live in your house, and then you go to your little microphone and you work from your house and you say things like, oh, not that hedge, and it's and everyone is,
right.
it loves it and thinks it's very funny,
uh-huh.
and you entertain so many people
right.
with
right.
your amazing talent, and how hard the work is for you to do.
All right. That's
Meanwhile,
enough.
I just
That's
have
enough.
To mow lawn after lawn after lawn and work in the hot sun and sweat and do acres and acres of your million-dollar property and keep mowing and mowing.
Yeah.
But I know,
that's fine.
I
We're
know
out of
the comparison
time.
Is nothing compared to
yeah,
what you
that,
do.
Never mind,
because
Jesus. That's
you,
fine.
You know, I all the multiple homes you own and the
Jesus,
plane
is your,
you have.
Is one of your relatives there with you? Because I heard someone laughing.
That's my cousin Omar.
Oh, really?
We should put on a show with those guys.
I think that'd be cool, Emerlin. That'd be awesome.
I believe they were there Saturday night. I believe we've already accomplished that this past weekend.
Morning, everybody. It's the world-famous K-Rock at 6:07.
You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. I have to tell you, this is the United States of America, and I don't think it's acceptable that Avatar has already opened in Europe, and it hasn't opened here yet.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I would just like to say...
USA!
I mean,
USA!
That's kind of BS, right?
Totally.
We're number two!
We got the British have seen the movie. The freaking frogs have seen the movie. We're all sitting around on our thumbs going, wow, I sure wish it were Friday. It sure would be cool if we could see the movie, too. Avatar is, without a doubt, the most anticipated film of 2009, of course, from the genius that is James Cameron. We got a chance to talk to him not long ago about the movie. Now we get to talk to one of the stars of the film, the beautiful Zoe Saldana, joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, you guys. Good morning. I mean, America's last because Jim likes to save the best for last.
Oh, nice
That's
try.
Very nice spin.
Very nice try. And yet, since we don't have any choice, we're waiting and we're excited.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about what that night was like when you world premiered in Britain after not only has the world been hearing about and waiting for Avatar for so long, but you guys who filmed this movie so long ago have got to have just been like, okay, now we're letting it out into the wild. I'm so nervous about what people are going to think. Was it like that?
I mean, I would hate to blow all the men their cover, but we were so
Hey, easy with that kind of talk. Wow.
Like, it was so, you know, everybody from the crew to Jim and all the actors, and it was a very emotional night for all of us to have that world premiere and to finally showcase the movie to an audience, and to have the overwhelming, beautiful feedback was, we were beside ourselves all night.
It sure seems like a lot of pressure to be in any movie that's this anticipated. You just go, man, you don't want people to have that high expectations, because for the most part, it's impossible to satisfy that.
Yeah, but you know something? I almost feel like it's good pressure because we believed in this project from the beginning. We knew it was going to be something really special, and also kind of like art film gravity defying, if there's any such phrase to say, because we were working with the technology that was going to be so new. However, it was not going to change the approach that each and every one of us actors were going to have to our characters. It's the same approach that I had on this character than any other character that I've ever done in terms of the training and the mental preparation and all the research and everything. If anything, it was more intense.
It was the same research as Drumline?
Well, yeah, trust me. Do you think it was easy for me to drop it like it's hot?
So, I'm going to go with yes.
So when you were on set making this movie, as fantastic as it was and considering how many things were different, it was essentially the same for you as doing other films? You didn't have to wear like lots of crazy suits and do lots of things with green screen and whatnot?
Well, this was actually actually more intense because I've never been challenged by such a character, by such a role in my acting career, where I needed every physical training and preparation and mental as well. It's the first time I'm playing a non-human, so I really wanted to do justice and bring this species to life along with the other actors that were playing the Na'vi. So it was a lot of, you know, martial arts training and movement training and archery and horseback riding with no saddle, of course. That was fun.
Sure.
I was like these Frisians that have, like, the really wide backs. Oh, my God. I look like a little puppet like that.
Now, with your martial arts training, you kick all our asses?
I have to say, don't get me mad after we've had a pint of beer.
Okay. All right, good.
All right. We're talking to Zoe Saldana, by the way, about Avatar, which opens everywhere on Friday. Tell me about James Cameron, if you can, in that we have heard that he is so committed to a project and has his fingers in everything. I mean, he's a screenwriter, producer, director. He shoots some of it. He's involved in every second of the film, everything that's on the frame. Is that tough when you have a guy that's into so many different things to work for? I mean, I would imagine, I don't want to say control freak because that has so many negative connotations, but I mean, he knows exactly what he wants at every minute.
Would be a bit of a conundrum or a canker sore if he was controlling. And Jim is everything but that. He's the most generous filmmaker with his art and with his knowledge. He conceived this, and he lived with this project in his head for over, you know, 10, 12 years. However, the moment he was able to manifest that, he knew that he couldn't do this alone. So he hired the most amazing people all around him and a cast that felt so passionate about his story. And he was just like, all right, you guys, let's all run with it. And that was his approach every single day on the project.
Hmm. We've got a clip from the film. We've been trying for years, Zoe, to bring clips to radio. And I don't know if it's going to catch on or not, but we do want to play a clip of your character in the movie Avatar, opening everywhere Friday.
Do not look in her eyes. Turn down, say they. Ikran is not horse. When Sahelu is made, Ikran will fly with only one hunter in the whole life. To become Aronyu hunter, you must choose your own Ikran, and he must choose you.
When?
When you are ready.
All right. I don't know what any of those words mean.
Help. What the F is what we're saying. Help.
Trust me. At starting Friday, you guys will know exactly when Sahelu is and an Ikran. You guys are going to want to buy your own Banshee.
I want one now.
I don't know what a Banshee is, but it sounds good. There really is a new language in the film that was invented for the movie, right?
And when you're doing the lines, if you use the new language that's invented, you use the wrong word, does somebody stop and go, no,
you
what's wrong
you
with
you?
Wrong.
There was this.
Really?
Well, there was this linguist from USC, Paul Frommer, that Jim hired to help him develop this language. And not only did he translate all the dialogue that was in the script, he actually created a language. That's how passionate he felt about this. And there were times in which I remember very specifically when I called Paul and I put Jim I held Jim aside too. I was like, well, I need a word to call Jake, you know, whenever I'm frustrated, whenever my character's frustrated at him, and also to call Sam whenever me as my person, whenever I'm frustrated, Sam. And he sent me an email saying, oh, call him Skaung. And I'm like, what does that mean? He goes, it means moron.
Nice. Nice.
Well, the movie looks fantastic. We've been talking about it a lot on this show, and it's been hard to get away, but it's finally going to be here on Friday. And as you sit down to Christmas dinner, Zoe, you have to be looking back at 2009 and go, Star Trek, Avatar, this is actually happening to me.
Santa's been pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't complain, but one thing I have to say, guys, especially to the men, bring tissue. Not only for your girlfriends, but for yourselves.
Really?
And hide behind those 3D glasses, because what's the most amazing thing about this movie, the technology complements the story, but it doesn't overpower it. This is a beautiful love story, and it's about two individuals like coming together and fighting for something that's right, and you guys are going to be taken for a huge ride.
I got to tell you, if you were to ask me, hey, which movie's going to make you cry, I would not go with Avatar.
Which movie are you going to for the love story?
We should talk after it then, because you're going to be
right.
Like, oh, my God.
I'm not doubting you. I'm just saying it wouldn't have been my guess.
All right, Zoe. Well, thank you for the time today. We're looking forward to the film, and have a very, very happy holiday, my dear.
See you guys. Bye.
Thanks very much. You know, everybody has levels of annoyance, levels of anger, levels of screaming, levels of how mad they get. Like, there's a top limit to how mad somebody can get.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I saw it from Lightning this morning. I actually saw Lightning more pissed about something than I've ever seen him pissed about.
Really?
I think I saw the same thing. Tell me why he was mad when you saw him.
I don't know. Something to do with the hubcaps on Beer Mug's car.
That's why.
He is throwing the biggest tantrum in the world. You would think that Beer Mug had just mowed down his family, left them for dead. The way Lightning is screaming at him about his hubcaps, he's so offended by them.
Beer Mug, instead of getting black rims, just took off his hubcaps just so that you could see the inside, like the black part of his rim, so that it looks kind of like it's black on black.
Okay.
And that's pretty ghetto to Lightning. He's like, no, you can't do that. Yeah, you can buy rims. $60 for an 18-inch. What are you doing? I can see your lug nuts, for God's sakes. He actually said that.
But why does Lightning care what Beer Mug does with his rims?
Lightning cares very much about cars.
Yeah, this is sacrilege.
Lightning, Beer Mug is a very, very low-paid employee.
Yeah, I know.
And
but
by low paid, I mean not she paid. Means not paid.
I think what happened was, see, Super Steve bought a very similar Scion and did the same thing because Steve didn't have any dough. And then he pulled off the hubcaps. Yeah, so I think Mug said, oh, this is the trend. And I'm thinking, dude, you seriously nowadays can get an 18-inch rim for $60.
That's one rim.
Yeah, well, yeah, you need four, but I mean...
That's a lot of money for Mug.
He just spent $18,000 on a car, so he can afford more money.
Maybe he's out.
Or wait. You don't have to take the hubcaps off. You can wait for maybe 3-4 weeks, maybe a month until you get the money for a nice set of wheels.
I don't understand why take the hubcaps off, though. Why not just leave the hubcaps on?
The latest trend is black rims, and most rims stock, like under the hubcaps, are flat black. So you get that instant appearance.
So it kind of looks like black just by popping off.
Well, you know what? A lot of race cars on the drag strip have black wheels, and that transcends to the street.
By the way, I don't know what makes you think, Lightning, that Beer Mug in 3 or 4 weeks is going to have expendable income of $250 to buy those rims. I mean, again, the guy doesn't have any money.
Plus, think of his booze budget.
I was thinking that, too.
You know?
We know what he spends
on alcohol. He drinks that in a day.
Yeah. He should sell blood and plasma, sperm, in order to get the money.
Why does
you guys missed it yesterday when he was yelling at me.
For what?
Well, what's the complaint about you with your big banana car?
That's unforgivable what you did.
Banana car.
It's unforgivable what I did. Did you hear what I started?
Yeah.
You know, every Thursday we've got a great guy named Hector who comes here who washes our cars.
Great.
Sure.
He does a really diligent job.
What are you talking about? 7 out of 10 at best.
Oh, Lightning.
He does a great car wash and he only charges $10.
I know, well, it's insane.
You get what you pay for.
So Lightning says to me,
You're gonna let Hector wash your new car?
And I was like, yeah, sure.
First of all, he uses hose water. Second of all, he uses chamois and he doesn't even have the proper machinery to clean them. I'm telling you, he's taking all the sediment from everyone else's cars and rubbing it into Ralph's brand new, beautiful car.
I've never had it.
It's a tragedy.
I've got my car washed because the guy comes to the station.
He does here in the parking lot. Yeah.
It's so convenient. It's
wonderful.
For $10, I've got my car washed for 4 years.
You're trading convenience for paint. Because it's rubbing all off.
My paint is fine.
Paint is fine.
And the car wash is really kind of exceptional.
But he uses hose water.
Exceptional. What does that mean?
You use hose water. What is he supposed to go to, a mountain glacier and melt down some ice and bring it down in buckets to wash your car?
Any good self-respecting detailer would use deionized water.
Well, of course. Everybody knows that.
Come on now.
You don't
seriously
want those nasty ions all over your car.
No, it glides right off. It keeps the
but
dirt off.
But he's not a detailer. He just comes and washes cars.
I know. He's just washing the dirt off. I mean, I get that. It's the
That's what a car wash is.
But don't you want a good...
He's just washing it.
But
taking the dirt
listen
off.
Listen to me. How dare he?
He says it in a disgusting tone.
The chamois, right? After 30 cars, it's got a lot of sediment in it, and he's scratching up all the other cars.
Here's the thing about that. No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
Lightning's just making wild assumptions.
Look at the black cars. Look at Mr. Weatherby's car. Look at some of the other cars that he's had a chance to clean, and they're just spider swirls all over it. And so, by the way, I had to call my guy in to go detail Mr. Weatherby's
car so he could return it back to the dealer because it was so there were so many squirrels all over it. And that's from Hector.
Why do you hate?
Maybe Beer Mug should get a job out there washing cars to raise money for his new rims.
Using deionized water.
Deionized
and
water.
And baby asses to wash the car with. So that's it's right.
No chamois, baby asses.
That's right. Live babies crawling all over the car. Wash it off. Soap of babies.
The things that you are obsessed about, like Beer Mug's rims. I mean, yeah. Okay, maybe it's a little ghetto. Okay, so what? I can't imagine
so
getting upset about
ghetto.
That.
I don't know. It's just that it's, but it's so easy not to be ghetto.
Maybe he wants to be ghetto.
No, but I don't think he thought about it.
How
he
does it affect
it
you
off.
One way or the other
he,
if he's
he
ghetto?
He pulled it off and thought, oh, this is cool. I'm like, you don't get.
Well, you should certainly dissuade him from that idea.
You can't just go to Pep Boys and buy some parts and throw them on your car and now it's cool. I mean, you have to do the right things to
you
your vehicle.
You gotta spend a lot of money. But listen, or trade mentions on the radio for equipment. That's how you do it.
I'm the car cool police. I say no, he gets a ticket.
But see, listen, stock, it was cooler. Stock, it was at least it looked good, and now it just looks like you're riding on stock rims.
Let him drive what he wants to drive and don't care. Just live and live. That's what you do.
Make a documentary about it, Scorsese.
It's all I have.
Make an impassioned documentary. You can send a Sundance next year of how people
get out there with your camera and document this travesty, this the crime against nature.
Like, this guy over here just washes the dirt off.
It's an outrage with ionized water.
Beer Mug's rims is Lightning's personal Darfur. I mean, it really is. Like, he has never been more pissed about anything in his life.